May 20th, 15, May 17th.
Yeah, we need to talk
for a couple of things. Essentially from the vision
sure.
Next.
Yeah, so. A lot going on, as usual.
Interesting, we have an ROV.
How you doing, Chris?
Good, how are you doing, Chris?
Not bad.
I had the kernel down the road.
What did you really?
I did. The colonel didn't.
Yeah.
No, he didn't.
He comes on the plane.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
He's a busy man, you know.
Which is the way it's just.
Wild fish, part of the sport fish.
No, I grew up.
We inherited from Kirk, in short.
Paul
said the river exploits.
This takes a little over 3 hours.
He's relearning the whole thing this year. Everywhere they went, there's no water in it in the past for a decade. It's just not there. But they're finding
so
all
Kurt,
new
get some fish.
They're in
1,300 so far.
Where wow. They've never been
and
shallow.
I didn't even have to trap yesterday.
That's
a couple hundred
and
in this morning. At least. Our average for May the last 10 years is 307.
Extrapolate. He's going to get four times the fish back.
Yeah.
He's going to get like 10,000.
Yeah, there you go. All the wild fish will come in too. Two, which I've gotten 15 of those.
What's that average? 15 out of 1,000 something.
Out of 1,300. Yeah, it's not too many. So. Yeah, some of that, and you know, one's born in our creek, and you know that kind of stuff. But, I put them all back to the river yesterday, though. Tagged them and put them back in the river.
Right.
Last year they ended up. Out of the, I think we had 50. Someone clear up to the spawning channel, at least one clear up to the spawning channel up at Trailbridge. I think Greg got one in the trap over there at Cougar. And so they were spread out. We got a couple of reports from fishermen. You know, hey, I hooked this fish, you know, below Lever Dam. You know. So they ended up going around. One came back in five different times. So, and a couple others three times, another one two times. You know, so we just kept putting them back out. Yeah,
this is where we want. Go.
They were born. Yeah. Something.
Yeah. So you have the constrained V notch in there.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's you know, but the flows are the same as probably they were last August when we did install that. And
you did.
So I can't say it's going to work at a higher flow in that kind of degree. You know, but it's promising. Let's put it that way. I mean, we've got 1,300 fish coming back in. Yeah. I know everything's
all right, right, folks. Wow. Let's go ahead and get this thing rolling here. Go around the room, just make sure we have everybody accounted for. I'm Andy Traylor, of course, Corps of Engineers.
John Thorpe, ODFW.
Lance Kruzik, NIMS.
Tammy Mackey, Corps of Engineers.
Greg Taylor, Corps.
Chris Walker, Corps.
Rich Piskowski, Corps.
Kirk Kramers, Mackenzie Hatchery.
Paul Friesen, ODFW.
Cam Sharp, ODFW.
Mark Johnson, ODFW.
Bernie
Beck,
Graham Hudson, ODFW.
Thank you.
Hey, Mark.
Anybody on the phone?
It's Greg from Mitchell.
Hello, Greg.
Greg, how's it going?
I'm good.
Hey, Brad.
Hey.
I know that Elise Kelly will be on at Nashville 10.
Okay. Great.
Sounds
good.
Is it
don't know.
Alright, one slight change to the agenda, as requested, we're going to talk about funding and getting the cougar samples from 2014 and future analyzed, but we'll talk about that after the Lever trapping operations. So a new number 5 in there, which is shown on the web meeting and up on the screen here, but it's probably not on your agendas if you printed one out. Any other changes or things that folks want to talk about for this meeting? Nope? Great. All right, first thing up, April H&T minutes. Did anyone send in comments, Tammy? Nope. All right. And unless there's any objections, we'll go ahead and approve those.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Sorry,
no contention.
No contention.
He meant
so
to.
Far.
They were perfect. Don't worry about it.
That was promise. The next crowd.
Okay. All right. Approved. Then. All right. Action items. Outstanding. Delayed outplanting. So the last meeting we agreed generally that delayed outplanting procedures slash kind of a study is generally acceptable with the conditions that are expected in 2015. And we put on here that Cam and Chris Caudill will continue to develop their plan, coordinate with the region to get further approval. Any updates?
No, I'm just connected with George Naughton, who started at Foster, and we've got crews out there, so we'll be talking about it over the course of the next month. So by next month, we'll have a soft plan in place and discuss it then.
Okay. So maybe we could make a note for next month's meeting to get a little update and maybe review the soft plan.
Yeah, it's kind of up in the air because we don't know about the tags or anything. And,
is that getting kind of late, Ken?
No, I don't think so. So we'll be holding fish through the at Foster through the month of August.
Okay.
Right? So if we pull a plan together for the June HMT meeting to start in July, then the fish will be held for a month to a month and a half through August, then outplanted probably the middle of September, and they're showing signs of being right, the idea that they'd spawn right away.
So the idea wasn't necessarily to get them throughout the run. It's just to get some.
No, we have a very limited number of tags that are available. Okay. Unless the Corps was able to find funds to purchase new tags. So the more you slice it, the less likely you're going to get a useful answer. So it'll be single group released with holding, without holding, two groups.
Okay. I think
there's a cap on, a pretty hard cap on the number of unclipped fish that can be tagged at Foster based on the percentage of the run.
Yeah, 4%, yeah, I forget what it was. But
really small number. So if we're going to test it, it has to be a simple experiment.
Gotcha.
So just to be clear, the number of wild fish that are part of this is what percentage of the outplanted, so a small percentage.
Right.
So it's just an experimental trial to see how it all works. It's not half the run or anything like that.
Right.
And then there are two other groups in that study treatment design.
The reservoir release and the
normal
outplant locations at Riverbend and at Gordon Road. So, I mean, we'll lay out the details, but I think the only way it's going to work is because Gordon Road is the only site that's going to be available for a late outplant because Riverbend will be dewatered by then.
Yeah.
So it'll be a Gordon Road versus no holding. Gordon Road release with protracted holding versus pre-spawning mortality of run of the river fish.
Great. Anything else on that one? Okay. Also related to delayed outplanting lands, you asked a question last meeting about if operations at Green Peter would be any different this year. And I looked into that and no. And maybe Chris can elaborate on this, but operations are basically same as normal, given the caveat that we have less water, of course.
Okay. Yeah, that's really the difference, is just low water. We typically use Green Peter to fill Foster and the wear operation that goes on. So I don't know if that's kind of what you were wondering about or not.
I can't remember, but it seemed like the concern would be that we don't drastically change any operations at Green Peter Foster because we are seeing success with the Chinook.
We have not. Except for just...
Hey, Andy, this is Dave. Is there any way that folks could speak into that phone a little bit louder? I can hear your voice really clearly, and I can hear Cameron's, but that's about it.
We're the ones that are right next to the
phone.
That's
too loud, guys.
That's what I kind of thought.
We'll move you towards the middle.
Speakers.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have a couple.
Shoot. It must exist.
Yeah. Somebody just stole them.
Not yet.
Okay.
Anything else on that? Is that sufficient? Mm-hmm. All right, great. Foster pre-sort jumping. Brett, have you had any more fish jumping out of your pre-sort pool since we last talked? Brett Boyd, are you still on the line?
Take it off mute.
He stepped out for a minute. No, this is Kenny. We haven't had any more fish jumping out yet.
Okay, that's good. Any progress on acquiring a cover for that pre-sort pool?
We've researched a few different things. The major thing we found is trying to find some kind of a support that goes across that. And being that the other side of the pool, there's no walkway up there, it's kind of, we can't access it.
Right. So what do we need to do to resolve this one? Have folks looked at any other kind of covers that are deployable from only one side?
I mean, that's what we're considering for Fall Creek, because we're going to have some stuff in the way on one side there as well. So Kevin Hayes has been working on a design for that.
Okay.
So he'd be, if we want to talk to somebody.
The major issue is that's going to be support.
Yeah, he's been looking at it because it's, if I understand it, it's kind of the same situations where you can only access one side.
I could visualize it like something like one of those covers that goes over loose loads and semis that just go from one side, just this clamshell kind of thing.
And he's,
I mean, they work and they're, I would guess, about the correct dimensions.
He's looking at something definitely that's motorized. I mean, at Cougar, we're just stringing it out, but you can get on both sides.
Yeah.
So I can see why it's not going to work at Foster.
Is it possible to put a walkway on the other side, bolt it to the concrete?
It is, yeah, and that's actually in the Mod 2 work. Okay. So I'm going to put a walkway over there. But that's,
right,
who knows, a year or two out. I'll check with Kevin and see.
Check with Kevin, because he's definitely working on that.
I could see something where you had it attached lengthwise across the side of the pre-sort pool that you can't access, within some kind of chain or rope or whatever that came across to the side you can access. If you had two people, you could maybe just pull it over. So instead of doing it lengthwise, like what we have at Minto or Foster, do it kind of widthwise. If that makes any sense. Might be something easier to do, at least for this year. All right, well, I'll take that one on. All right, next one, alternate outplant strategies based on temperature and flow. Either Lance or Greg, you guys were going to try to send us something similar to what happens on the road for outplanting strategies, or just temperature control based on.
So the Rogue, what the Rogue is doing, I should just send you exactly what we have for Rogue. I should just send that, because it's already developed, it's there. At Agnes right now, we're doing things real time. We're operating to about 66 degrees, and so we're making real time adjustments all the time right now, and then that'll keep slipping over the next few months, and it ends up slipping up to about 69 degrees eventually. So.
Can you just send that to the group when you get a chance?
Fire you a copy of it, because we were just playing with it again yesterday. In fact, I'm right after this meeting, I'm meeting with DFW to talk some more about it.
Cool.
So the point was, you know, that managing flows at Lost Creek on the Rogue for spring Chinook are so important, but yet in the Willamette, you know, there hasn't been any work done on that to date. And so it's just starting to get the mindset that it's so important for pre-spawning mortality and all of that stuff. So start thinking about planning for that in the future and what the opportunities may be to do something similar for listed fish.
So I've been watching Salem a little bit, and it'd be interesting to, if nothing else, we could take what the Rogue has and then just go back and look at what how that would line up with what Willamette Falls has looked like over the years, and whether, you know, it's going to be applicable, or whether we'd need to kind of put our own stamp on what we've got for the Willamette. Mm-hmm.
Is this primarily temperature management problem? Mm-hmm. It would be good when you guys start talking that to get GS to kind of provide their understanding of how the system has worked. They've modeled mm-hmm. and looked at field data quite a bit. Understand how that each tributary contributes to the mean stem pretty well now.
You're talking the Willamette?
Yeah.
Does the model work at extremes? Like what we have, what we're looking at here in the Willamette right now, this is an extreme year coming up.
Probably not.
So it's mostly going to be for more the average year situation, and we're always going to scramble to understand what we should do in extreme years.
That's a good point.
I mean, in the Rogue, what gets done down there is all about the extremes. It's about trying to keep things in check in those extreme years, the 2001s, those are the years that are kind of moneymaker years that they've been able to hold some of those years in check when in the past it may not have. And so they've got some, it's volume related, but it's also temperature related. There's two different things that are being looked at all the time.
I think some of the GS work did show, though, the extent that some of the projects can have on the main stem and the limitations that the discharges from the projects can have on the main stem. And in a hot condition, it'll become a trade-off to an extent of providing cool water, which may not attract adults up, in order to cool the main stem. So there'll have to be a discussion on what makes sense.
Hey, Rich, we have an RM&E concept that proposes to address some of that, right?
I think it does this year. Yeah.
It's more just, you know, getting it on the table for discussion and management actions, because, I mean, the Willamette's definitely not the Rogue, and the opportunities are not the same as the Rogue, you know, but make progress towards what we can do.
Yeah. So it sounds like when we go to adapt this to the Willamette, we want to make sure that we include some of the extremes that we're probably going to see, like this year and the next decade or so,
yeah.
Could be one of the points as we move that along.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And keep in mind, you're talking about a single dam system that you're able to sort of, versus tributary targets, 13 dams, you know, it's going to be more difficult here. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't try it.
Yeah.
So I'm sending myself an email. Which is the only way it'll happen.
All right, the remaining action item on here was Lieber trapping, and Cam wrote up the operation. We're going to talk about that later on in the agenda.
Got it.
Moving on to updates, Greg, Marion Forks, and Minto, what do you got for us?
All right, everything up with Marion Forks is going well. Cam helped out and got the wares in, so we can start out planting as soon as we start seeing some fish. We did break a little bit of cold water disease in one pond, but got medicated food and got that stopped pretty quickly. A little bit of sunburn on one other circular, but fish are doing well, way ahead of schedule, obviously, with warmer water up there in the early spring, but everything's doing well. Down in Minto, collections are pretty slow. We've seen 170 winter steelhead. We saw 179 all last year, 17 summers, we had 22 Chinook, 46 degrees and 1,000 CFS. We're going to go back to kind of the pre temperature control and probably won't see fish till June or July, maybe into August if we keep the same temperature. So, yeah, everything here is going fairly well, just catching up on some maintenance items. And that's about it.
Great. Thank you.
One point Chris brought up when I was up there yesterday was the timing to get new paint on those ponds. The sunburn might be related to the light color in the green ponds and all of the paint's coming off of the red ponds. And that's just maintenance stuff.
Yeah.
If that has to happen, a similar situation is what's going on at the McKenzie for the flow mixing situation. It's got to be done in like March, before fish go up there. So you have to let the plan ahead, keep that on the agenda, so that if the snow's clear or whatever, then that, which is a pretty big job, is funded and ready to happen with money that has to have been saved, because if the same thing happens next year, that we don't have funds available until after fish go into the ponds, we can't do anything to the water supplies or to the ponds themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we have funding available to repaint those ponds, and that's going to come out as a separate task order, as far as that's mm-hmm. what we talked about. Yeah. Separate from the regular Marion Forks Minto O&M task order. So that'll drop July 1st. Mm-hmm. That money will be available.
And that way, if we need to extend it past the end of June next year, it doesn't drag everything else along. Mm-hmm. Greg.
It'll have to be done in March or April.
That's probably. Was it March and April when you did them last time?
Yeah, well, it's the only time we have ponds out there available. So.
Okay.
Once we get rid of all the smolts and the babies are still inside.
And Greg, just so you know, I'm slow and I do poor work. We did not get the Horn Creek we're in. We scoped it out, and we'll get it in next week. We got Marion.
You're talking the one down on the Forest Service or the one up above?
The one on the Forest Service.
Okay, just make sure we have permission from
absolutely.
Them. That's their sacred ground with their ancient, that building's on the register, so.
We're not going to tear the building down. I'll talk to Darren, it'll all happen, but we scoped it out. Okay. It'll be easy to do, but it'll happen next
year. Okay, it's something that needs to go in.
Yeah. So with funding available in July, you guys should be able to plan, and next spring, get those ponds painted.
We'll get it out to bid and get it all squared away, you know, by November, and just put it as soon as possible.
Yeah, it's great. I think our engineers are finally realizing that they have to do stuff ahead of time. I mean, they're late every time they do one. But
could your engineers pass it on to our engineers?
No, awesome. I think they went to school at the same place.
Cool, good. Anything else for Marion Forks Minto?
No, just a lot of calls and everybody asking where all the fish are, but we're just kind of pre-ozone and temperature control, so, which on this year might not be a bad thing, leaving them in the river for a while.
So, Greg, you said it's 46 at Minto right now?
Niagara. We got up to 46 and a half, I think, yesterday.
Wow. Pretty predictable.
Down 0 for 6 on fishing trips. It's cold.
All right, moving on. South San Diego and Foster. Brett, are you back?
Yeah.
All right. You want to give us an update?
Everything at the hatchery is looking good. All the juveniles are on track and put out and we'll be ready for marking in July. At Foster, we've started to see quite a few Chinook. We've collected 1,399 adults so far, 1,270 hatchery fish, and 129 wild. We've got the tribal allocations out of the way. We've started collecting brood. We've been doing some recycling, and we're going to start food banking and selling soon. Summer steelhead numbers are really low. We've only got 95 so far. We had about 200 at this time last year, so it's just kind of seeing us. It's a little lower than last year, so anyway, still very low. So we've been keeping any good fish for brood, but we haven't really been giving very many of those fish back into the fishery. Winter steelhead numbers are low. We've got 121, and last year we had 200 at this point. But we're also still getting winners every time we work the trap, so that's encouraging. And
hey, Brett, this is Dave. Could you remind me what was the total number of winners that you received last year at the facility?
214.
That was a total number, and you're at what right now?
121.
Okay, thanks.
And but we are starting to see fish. Larger numbers of fish holding below Foster again. They're really cooling up right below the juvenile bypass weir spill. That's in that spill gate, and they're jumping at the dam again. But they're also holding right at the ladder entrance. So there's a significant number of fish just holding there, rolling, and so there's a lot of fish. We're going to be working with Benton to study and monitor this. We have a conference call with him today at 3, to work with Chris Caudill from University of Idaho, and I think Greg Taylor is going to get involved and try to come up with a plan to see if we can get some more fish moving by manipulating the ladder entrances, AWS flow, and then just kind of working with those folks to come up with some sort of framework so we can monitor that and kind of measure its success. So.
Yeah, Brett, I talked to Fenton yesterday, and he said that you were going to try to make a small adjustment to the ladder entrance yesterday.
Yeah, I went ahead and put it off auto and opened it all the way.
Okay.
And then we had about 100 fish move last night. So, and then I talked to Fenton. I'm just wondering, you know, what the – it'd be interesting to see what the flow requirement is for that ladder, because we have – 4 AWS pumps, we're at low summer flows, and we have 2 of the pumps running right now. So I don't understand, do we need to have those pumps running all the time, or can we shut those pumps off and then just kind of use those pumps to provide some additional traction water to get those fish to move, you know, turn them on and off, that kind of thing. We used to do that at work. We had success with it. Now they're just on all the time, and it doesn't seem to be doing much, but then again, we're also got that weird going too, which is obviously a huge change. So,
right.
So, Brett, I don't have enough understanding of the geometry of the whole system there. It's complicated, but are any of the changes that you and Chris are going to work on, are they going to increase temperature of water into the through the ladder? Is water temperature going to go
up? We have no real means of doing that.
All right.
Brett, just so folks here in the room have an idea, when I was out there last week and I looked at the entrance differential on the main entrance, it looked a little bit high, like around 2 feet or so, maybe a little bit higher. And when you opened that entrance, did you make a note of what the entrance differential went down to?
I didn't. We can go back and look, though, because it was on auto. So there's an auto setting.
Right.
So, yeah, so that'll be what it is. I just opened it 100%.
Hmm. Interesting.
That's the way we used to run. That's the way we never had a gate there that right. before. It was just an open hole. So, and there's still plenty with those 2 pumps running, especially there's a ton of water still coming out of it.
Right. Yeah, I just wonder. When I was looking at it, it looked like the submergence of that gate was about 2 feet or so, which compared to some other ladders seems pretty high to me. I've seen submergences upwards of like 8 or 10 feet sometimes, depending on how much flow is coming out of the ladder. It could be appropriate for that design. I'm not totally sure what the hydraulic requirements were, but I know NIMS criteria for entrances is between 1 and 2 feet entrance differential or head on that. And so when I looked at it, it did look a little bit high. So that having a higher differential would make it a little more difficult for fish to enter the ladder. So that could be one of the problems there. So.
The other thing was that it was either Griff or Fenton mentioned that there was a valve that was cavitating, so it was shut off, so you weren't drawing water from the intake at the upper end of the penstock into the ladder somewhere.
Yeah, that only provides water to the side entrance.
So if the side entrance is where some of the fish are kegging up below the spill.
Right, yeah, but I'm just saying that's the valve they were talking about. That's gravity, that's additional gravity flow to the side entrance is what that is.
Right, so it comes from shallower in the column, should be possibly a little warmer.
Mm-hmm.
And if that valve got fixed somehow, then warmer water could be introduced into one of the arms of the ladder right where the fish are. What's the chance of fixing the valve?
Good question. I don't know. It's an engineering research. I'll see if I can trace that one down. When I look, so there's a PLC screen at the new Foster trap.
PLC, sorry.
Sorry, programmable logic control.
Of course.
A digital readout, right? Of
things
all
aren't the way they used to be.
Of all the water elevations, for tail water, for entrance, for different pools, for stuff like that. And it had, I think, the 2 intakes that are in the forebay that uh-huh. I talked about. And I believe it had the elevation that they were at and then also the temperature. And when I, this, when I looked at it, this was like a month ago, I think there was a difference of about 4 degrees
right
between these two. So that would be something that would be interesting to monitor when you go to do this
Which is gigantic in the Chinook migration.
Yeah,
huge.
And I was surprised because I don't think the elevation difference between those two intakes was a whole lot.
Yeah, I'm afraid it's
about, so about 10 or 12 feet. Flow. We looked at the temperature string floating in the forebay and then matched up where that string was to the intake, and it looked like it was warmer.
Yeah.
Anyway, warm water.
All right. Anything else for Sussanium or Foster?
Okay, I'm going to let everybody know, too. Another thing we may be fighting this year is that they have that juvenile study going on to where they're going to be manipulating the way the flow goes through or over Foster. So it sounds, to my understanding, that every 4 days they're going to switch from, I guess the weir will be operating all the time, and then the basically the river flow then will be switched between turbine flow and spill gate flow, and it will be switched every 4 days. So I think that's probably going to have a pretty huge impact, especially when they switch over to spill gate. I mean, that's obviously a lot of attraction water. It's going to be surface water. It's going to be warmer. So we're probably going to be fighting that until that study period ends, and I believe they're going to do that through sometime in June, middle of June. So
Melissa and Kathleen join us. Melissa, this is your fish that we're trying to get our hands on, and they won't go in the bloody ladder. So they're kegged up below, so your samples then end up coming from spawning ground survey carcasses below Boston, which throws a lot of interventions into your analysis and the whole system. So.
All right, thanks, Brett.
Yeah.
All right, Kenzie, Kurt.
Okay, well, we got our fish health check just last Friday. Things are great. Fish health is really good. We've been doing inventories on the ponds and getting things spread out a little bit. We have plenty of room at Mackenzie, by the way. give me more fish. So anyway, the big thing that we did, normally we don't open our trap till May 15th. We opened it April 30th this year. We've collected 1,334 fish so far. Our average for the last 10 years in May has been from May 15th to the end of May is 307. So, it's happening. The one thing, you know, we did a fish ladder modification last year in August. We immediately collected, well, I'll say immediately, but we collected 400 fish in August last year, where normally we collect maybe 100. And so I think the modification is doing well. The conditions are the same as they were in August. EWEB takes a lot into the canal, so we're at summer lows already in the below Liebert Dam. So we're at 1,000 CFS, 1,050, whatever it is. They keep it right there in that neighborhood. So I can't say that, I think I can say the ladder modification worked, but we don't have 3,000 CFS out there to test it with that kind of flow. Right. Hopefully next year we'll have that opportunity. You guys are talking about height on, I'm not sure exactly what Brett was saying about the entrance to the ladder and stuff. We have about 30 inches of flow that goes out into the river. It's even with the level of the river, so they don't have to really jump up into, well, they do, but they're not jumping, say, 3 feet or a foot or 6 inches even. They're, like, coming in and jumping right into the into that column of water. They don't seem to have any trouble doing that. So, looking at it, if we had 3,000 CFS, we would have less of a column of water. It'd be, you know, the river level would be up a little bit, so maybe we'd only have 20 inches or less. But so I'd like to see how that works. You know, it'd be interesting to see if we're pulling in the same number of fish in a normal year. What is the normal now? I'm not sure. But anyway, this year is really an unusual year. But ladder's working great. We're pulling in lots of fish. We've gone through that 1,300, but I've got 200-300 in a trap that I didn't get into yesterday. We collected another 50 to 100 last night. So things are really moving along and collecting fish. I've put some brood stock to the side, some outplant fish to the side, and I've given 950 fish to the tribal folks and Fufferland County. I'm balancing the thought of, are we going to get a whole lot more fish, or, you know, it's always a thing this time of year. So I will continue to roll the dice and make guesses. But anyway, so
professional experience.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I have lots of data to look back on, but this is such a weird year, you know, that, yeah, it's a strange one. So we have gotten 34 fish from Lieberg Hatchery. Just we got a dozen just yesterday. So that's been over the last couple of weeks also. Lieberg Dam, the last numbers I saw were about 30 hatchery fish have gone over Lieberg Dam. So,
I'll get an update on that for later.
Oh, do you? Okay, good, good. Okay. So I think we're getting a lot of fish in that maybe might be approaching there, you know, in the past, possibly. All I guess, but we sure are pulling in a lot of fish, and on a normal flow year, hopefully we'd be able to do the same thing, you know, getting that component into the hatchery. So
we worked out, Kurt and I, a way of sub-sampling for coated wire tags of hatchery fish at Mackenzie because of the requirements for sequestering a large number of fish that we presume will supplement outplants above cougar. Because his tagging rate is about 50%+ now, is subsampling the coated wire tag fish and tracking coated wire tag fish that are going into the pond to be sequestered for outplanting, so that we can extrapolate the actual coated wire tag reads to the total number of coated wire tag fish that come into the system, without having sampled all of the coated wire tag fish. If that appeals strongly for good reasons to the other hatchery managers, we can work out how that happens, how we can get good estimates of recoveries of coated wire tag fish that are expandable for a situation where we normally would like to take 100% of the wire. But we have to talk about that because it's not a trivial exercise keeping track of fish you did and did not sample.
So at this time, we've only put like 40 coated wire tag fish into that group for outplanting. So it's a small number. We've already taken 500 snouts, you know. So it's it's good. A lot of fish is good, right?
Yeah, it's good for them. It's great you're getting them in the facility.
Yeah, no kidding. So that's what's happening with us.
Hey, so question, Kurt.
Yeah.
So last year, we kind of banked, so to speak, some females for cougar based on the projected low returns back to cougar trap.
Mm-hmm.
What are you guys planning for this year?
Same thing. Yeah, in fact, I've already got 100 fish females already put to the side, maybe, I don't know, a couple dozen males. And I'm going to try to get portion throughout the run, you know, so I'll do my best, but yeah, I'm banking them though. Yeah.
Great. All right, Greg, any update on the cougar trap?
Yeah, so a week and a half ago, we found something I can only describe as a log in the turbine unit of a cougar. It's not good. When you have spacing on the trash rack, it's like this.
Louder, please.
Dave!
Perfect.
Good. Okay, I'll scream.
I don't need my headset. I can hear you up here.
So we found a log in the turbine unit at Cougar. It's not a good thing. We're trying to get to the bottom of what happened there, why that happened. In the meantime, we're spilling over at the RO, so we're not going to be collecting a lot of fish at Cougar. Now, typically we don't collect hardly any fish at Cougar this time of year anyway. We did see two Chinook over at the regulating outlet, so there are a few fish around, but we're in a holding pattern. We got to get an ROV into the tower and start looking around and figuring out whether we had a breach of trash rack. We got a gate that's sitting on trash or debris and then is bypassing the trash rack. We're not sure what's going on yet. So this could run the gamut from we see it, it's not a big deal, and we start right back up next week, or we could be down for a whole bunch of time. So we don't know what that is yet.
And that flow helps with your attraction for the ladder, right?
Yeah. I mean, we, yeah. without, I mean, we can pump and pump and pump,
yeah, yeah.
but if all the water's over at the RO,
right, right.
Yeah. it's, you know, it's kind of pointless. So anyway, we're hoping for the best, but it is what it is right now. And it was something that was serious enough in nature that it could have been a catastrophic failure of the unit. So it was a big deal.
But it got caught before it hit the turbine. It's in the
Well, it got caught during a unit inspection, during our unit annual, and this thing was wedged. I mean, literally
got wedged. Caught during what?
The unit annual, when the unit is taken out to do the annual inspection and maintenance work. I can send the pictures. They're pretty impressive. But anyway, we're working that, and we're trying to do the best we can with it. So that's kind of what's happening with Cougar. Prior to that time, we hadn't collected any Chinook. We had collected 10 bull trout, which is the most we've ever collected that time of year at that facility. So that was interesting. Fall Creek, we are...
Hey, quick question sure. on Cougar before you jump off of there. So if it looks like those adults are going up the RO channel, any thoughts on how to minimize that or get them back over to the ladder?
Salmon cannon. No, we're looking at... No, we seriously are going to look at other plan B, C, D, whatever plan we're going to need.
Is there opportunities for a cam picket weir thing on the channel?
I had Doug and Chad out there on Monday scoping it out.
Okay.
So, yes, one alternative we would look at is trying to block fish from the RO, period.
But we'd have to... Anybody tried seining adults out there?
Oh, my God. Have you seen the stomach basin?
It was sucked. It sucked so bad. But
it's super deep.
Oh, really? Like over...
Oh, like... Oh, no, like 50. It's the stilling basin at Cougar is insane. So it's...
First thing. We got a first thing. We do.
We'll hire commercial fishing.
Shoot. Okay, so the ROV, when is that going in?
The 26th, sometime next week. We're hoping to get it here this week and couldn't make that happen. So anyway, we're working on it. We're doing the best we can.
What does the flow look like out of the RO compared to what's normally coming out of the...
It looks very low.
Is it
so we're not normally running 300 CFS. I mean, normally we'd be running 400, 450 this time of year. So it's very low. And I guess in that case, it's okay. It's good. But if this is going to go beyond the end of the month, we're going to have to come up with a different plan, because we're going to get, you know, a handful of fish in there is one thing, but a big chunk of them, hundreds back there, will be a whole other story. And they will come out. The second you shut that RO off, they come out. But if we don't have any way, you know, anything to shut them off to, that will be the problem.
So you say there's 300 CFS right now. What's the inflow look like?
About 425.
Oh.
So we're storing a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. Not much.
That's the other thing to mention at Cougar. Because of the situation with the storage in the lake, right now we're estimated to lose the capability of doing temperature control sometime in July. That's going to put a big-time damper on fish collection.
What about dissolved gas in the stilling basin by the RO?
It's not a problem at these flow levels. At three, we've got a nice... Catherine Tackley years ago did a really nice study there where we did a controlled release from there and measured TDG. So it's not a concern here, and wouldn't be up until more like about an 800 to 1,000 CFS release. So far, so good on that issue.
So it could just end up like 2010, where we just have a really late start on the... trapping operation.
Good. Don't, I mean, we literally just don't even, I mean, until we get the ROV down there to see what's even going. Like I said, the second it goes down, it may say, hey, we're good, and we can fire it back up, and no big deal. But my gut tells me, been around these projects long enough, you get a log in the unit, something's awry. Something is not going well there. And because it's associated with the tower and the way the tower is put together, fixing that is likely not to be easy. Imagine it's a big, huge-ass pile of debris that's built up in the sump near the gate structure. It's going to be hundreds of feet down. Try to get that material out of there. And so it won't be, if that's what it is, it won't be easy to do.
Can the trap operate now?
The trap could operate now. We took it out during the unit outage. It would be a feel good. I mean, we could pump water, but if all the water is really over at the RO, that's what the fish are going to be. So.
And if you found a way to do a weir or something and pumping, maybe.
Well, that's the one, and then we did talk about that, Bernadette. If we blocked the RO and we ran, and we even if we didn't run the units, but we run like speed no load, so we'd put water down through the units. We'd probably get enough traction there that we'd get some fish coming over just because they weren't in the RO. So that's one alternative we're definitely looking at. We're trying to think about this, but then not get too crazy until we have a little more definitive information.
Yeah, but when you mentioned we're losing the ability to control temperatures, add the fact that the run's coming in early, there's a window here that you want to be able to respond before you lose temperature control.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the reservoir is down that low that you're losing temp ops from the tower?
Correct.
Wow.
We will.
Man.
So the reservoir is not even 25%. It's barely 25% full.
Wow.
And we've been at 300 for a long time trying to catch back up. So there's not much we can do. Griff keeps calling me and asking me about what we can do. Well, yeah, we could put the South Fork on about 100 CFS, and but that's not really a legitimate option. I mean, we've taken the South Fork down basically the authorized minimum in coordination with people in this room, and we're just going to see what happens. And we are getting a little bit of additional storage, but right now, we're 90 feet below full. So it's a bunch of water.
So, Greg, given the situation, is there any new opportunities to enhance juvenile Chinook out-migration from Cougar where things stand now with all that's going on there?
Well, I mean, I think any time we're passing fish through that regulating outlet versus the unit, we're probably to the better. So that's good. I mean, the tower's sort of operating the same way it has. What's nice is you have a smaller pool. So theoretically, fish are getting down to the dam quicker, and we did see that early in the season with the PFFC. So.
And you're transporting the fish you caught?
We are. We've transported several thousand fish, which is great, but it's kind of a small drop in the bucket if you think about what's coming in.
But is there anything more that can be done given where things stand right now?
More in terms of like
getting fish out?
Out.
Right now? Maybe just think about that. Maybe there's a unique opportunity that we have given all the stuff that's going on to do something a little bit different.
The one other thing I'd suggest for getting fish out would be more flow. But that's going to exacerbate how quickly you drop. And then remember, when we start losing temperature control, we don't just lose temperature control. We're going to lose downstream fish passage too, because now you're now you're pulling from deep again, and you don't have any surface. You won't have any surface flow.
Pray for rain.
We have to move everywhere else.
May has been better, but yeah, we're a long way behind. Fall Creek is, we're about double where we were last year at this time. So that's great. Got 135 fish. Yeah, it's encouraging. We don't know what that means. They're just early. Or they've already been early, so we don't know if it's just we're going to get a better return there, or they're even that much earlier than they have been the last couple of years when they've been very early. So, but yeah, really encouraging numbers so far.
It seems like the run is early everywhere that we've got reasonable temperatures to upstream migration. Wherever it's really cold, it's not. We're early at Bennett. We're early at. McKenzie.
We've been early. I mean, the fish there have been coming back early for years. You know, our peaks are in May there now. So, but I don't know if it's on top of, with the environmental conditions, is it that much earlier or not? But we'll find out.
All right. Thanks, Greg.
Yeah.
John, you want to talk to you?
Yeah. Lamont guys are Bieber. At Dexter right now. UI's down there. They let about 75 fish in on either Monday or Tuesday, so they have something to work. But they have not opened the trap, so who knows how many thousand fish are swimming around out in that pool. You can ask the snaggers. But,
aren't they going to open it on the 18th or 16th or something?
That's what it was for.
Just a piece. I don't think they want to face what's about to come. So, but as soon as they open it, they'll be collecting fish, but they'll have the fish buyers there too. So we should see a lot of fish. Other than that, there's not too much going on. So they're marking fish, and they should be done, I think, by the end of June now. But nothing unusual. And then Liebert, you gave the update on Liebert trap there.
Yeah,
for some reason they're getting fish too. So
yeah, they are. My
question is, if the ladder's attracting better at McKenzie, how come we're still getting fish at Liebert?
Yeah, well, we don't get them all.
You don't get
them
all.
We have 85% rate. We're looking at trying to get 95, but still at least 5%. What happens?
Yeah,
maybe we're up to 95. I don't know.
I like
the good news is they're going someplace where we can get our hands on them.
Yeah.
I thought the comment you had yesterday that the sport fishermen there, the outfitters were not seeing fish above McKenzie where they usually hold, which perhaps that means he's pulled fish out of the river that would go up into that hole.
I've just heard a couple of thoughts from guys that I'm not seeing many fish in the Curry Hole and above.
Jeff, it's Cameron. Dan asked me whether he wanted DNA samples off of unclipped fish that go to Little Fall Creek. And I said I see nothing in the future for that. So no. Do you agree? Is there any reason to investigate?
If you don't have any use for it, I don't.
If they come across unclipped fish today, are we prepared? My guy's there to sample, but are we prepared to transport an unclipped fish, even if it's just one, to Little Fall Creek?
We talked about it, and we thought that there are probably going to be so few today that we probably will just put them back into the trap, and we're going to run the trap again next Tuesday, actually Tuesday and Wednesday, and we will do the first transport of unmarked fish then. Although there is a caveat. I'm actually waiting for a phone call from Tim to find out what they found in that first batch of fish. They're going to run two groups up to the North Fork today, and after they get done the first group, we'll have an idea how many unmarked fish are actually in that in the trap.
Okay.
If we have a bunch of them, we we may be jumping in the truck and running up there and transporting them up to Little Fall Creek.
Okay, I've got people that can help if necessary with sampling, transport, setting up pipes, whatever. Whatever it takes.
They have a truck and trailer?
No. People. Strong backs, okay. Strong minds.
That 300-gallon portable is available. We could run some people over to Fall Creek and grab the 300-gallon portable.
What kind of hookup does that have, Greg?
It's just standard. I mean, a standard hitch for.
No, for releasing fish.
Oh, it's got a 12-inch.
12-inch, that would work.
I think so.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Ooh. So we're going to talk later.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Your people, though. My people are busy. Yeah.
No, as long as we can tote it, that'll work great.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it'd be available.
Okay.
Greg, are your people hauling?
Yes.
U of I fish today?
Yes.
And that worked so well last year, that was unbelievable. Excellent.
So the plan, I guess, is to have us down there every Wednesday, moving 120 fish a week for 10 weeks or whatever.
So this is Dexter.
Tim said that he was pretty sure he had 120 fish plus in the trap already.
Yeah, sounded like it.
All right. Fish counts at Bennett and Lieber. You getting counts? Any news there?
Fish early at Bennett. Big numbers of fish. Quite a bit ahead of last year. We're sitting on 2,100 plus Chinook, of which nearly 300 are unmarked. That's combined upper and lower Bennett, but lower Bennett is not a Chinook show this year. It's all happening at upper Bennett. Minto, as Greg said, they haven't entered Minto yet, so they're kegged up somewhere in between. So
down where the 50-degree water is.
But it's cold and it's still flowing, and okay, we're all right for now.
Be like that for
no bad news yet. Plus, we're not ready to start out planning right away. It'll be next week, so cameras are fine. And these have always been posted online, so you can always go to the fish counts in ODFW website under the fishing tab. Click on fish counts, click on the North Santa Yam to get the Bennett counts. Starting a couple weeks ago, Mike Hoganson stepped it up a lot and is doing the same thing for Lieber counts. That's click on ODFW, fishing, fish counts, Lieber ladder. We got a monthly. And the last report at Lieber Dam was on 5/14. It's going to happen on a 1 to 2 week kind of rotation, whenever he can get people reading the video. But as of 5/14, 169 unmarked fish had passed Lieber Dam and 59 marked fish. Okay? 59 marked fish. And some people who won't be named started whinging and moaning about, well, that looks like it's a high PHAS. But it's always been the case that hatchery fish go up over Lieber and then fall back. Not all of them. We always get some. Of course, we get the PHAS above Lieber.
Oh, yeah.
But you can't look at the Lieber counts and use that to predict what PHAS is going to be in the upper river. Okay? Dave?
Yes, Cam.
You can't use current real-time Lieber counts of clipped and unclipped fish to predict what PHAS is going to end up being at the end of the season. There.
Thank you for that clarification. Did I ask for one?
Yeah. Come on, Dave. Fight back.
I was thinking the other side of the coin on that ratio of the low return of wilds, because hatcheries are making up such a high proportion.
Could be
based off of what you
false counts haven't been incurred.
Right, really early, right? And things seem to be happening early, but we don't know that. You give it a little time, a month, and then we can start talking about kind of projecting. But it's been a couple weeks, so yeah, don't laugh at me. It's every year. All right, all is well. When do we get to the trapping operation stuff?
In just a minute here. In addition to the counts that Cam referenced at the beginning of the month, I also sent out the first holistic Willamette Valley fish count spreadsheet to most of these folks that has North Santa Yam, South Santa Yam, which includes, you know, the Bennett's, and then also Minto, and then Broodstock, and Mount Planting, and McKenzie, and Middle Fork. So it's all there, hopefully, except for, I'm not including the counts over Willamette Falls. But all that's available, and we're going to send that out on a monthly basis, somewhere around the first week or so of each month, capturing the previous month. And those are also posted to the web on the hatchery management team site that Tammy helps maintain.
The one thing we'll want to do is make sure that April, either there's some kind of year-to-date column or something, because when we send out that count, it looks like, okay, here's the count, but it's missing March, it's missing, you know, so like right. The winter steelhead count is off.
Sure. Right, right.
So we can either make that a year-to-date or... That's the only comment. It looked great, otherwise.
Yeah, I think that'd be really beneficial. And then also maybe, like, so for May, we could have tally for May, and then instead of reflecting the entire month of April, just have totals from April.
Yeah, there you go.
And then totals year-to-date.
Year-to-date, like that. Yep.
Because otherwise it's just going to grow into an enormous spreadsheet that we aren't going to look at.
It is,
but
yeah.
Hopefully this is helpful for folks.
It is. It's great to have it. Everybody has been saying it's good to have it in one place. I mean, you can always go out to the 15 different sources and pull together when you have one question. What a pain. Willamette Falls counts. You know, I don't know this, but for a fact, but we might be able to get real-time clipped and unclipped data from them, too, because I get that at the end of the year and report that. Actual clipped and unclipped Chinook up and over Willamette Falls. But in order for them to get that, wouldn't that suggest that they track it in real time?
They do track it. There's a mark rate listed. That's the very bottom.
It's the mark
rate,
but it's not the actual count of... Well, they must get it from the...
I'm just saying it's different this year than it has been. Like, it was, the mark rate is higher.
It's higher.
But is that available on an electronic
form? Not online, but it is available if you need it.
That gets just the whole picture, right? From an Oregon city... to all of the destinations that we track the fish.
So it was running about 7 or 8% higher so far this year.
And even if it's just you take the posted total Chinook count and use the percent marked rate to kind of estimate. That could work.
So, Andy, did you want us to contact you with the numbers monthly? How do you want to do that?
I'll get in touch with you guys.
Okay.
And I knew you guys weren't going to open the trap until the very end of April, so...
Yeah.
For McKinsey's just blank.
Sure, yeah.
I'll get in touch with you guys towards the end of the month and then get whatever you have.
Okay.
And work it out.
All right.
Thanks. And if anybody else has suggestions or improvements that they would like to see with the fish count spreadsheet or additions, whatever, just let me know. It's flexible. All right. Anything else for updates, different projects, hatcheries? Okay, moving on to Mr. Sharp, Lieber Trapping Operations.
So I have a draft operations plan, which I will send electronically to everybody, anybody who has an interest. Who's seen it so far? Bernadette, have you seen it?
Did you send that?
Did I send this up to the group?
They went out to the agenda.
Yeah, I included it with the agenda.
Good. Anybody else have comments on it? Anybody reviewed it and have comments that I need to integrate? I got comments that I needed to have a reporting description of how reporting will occur, and that's going to occur weekly to everybody in the group, and instantly if something catastrophic happens, like they have a fish kill or the truck gets blown out, and that's as much as I think we need to do.
I'd like to make a comment about Lieber Dam right now. EWEB has been told that they have to repair that dam now, so they have to repair each roll gate on that. With they're going to go back to their old style electrical, whatever it was. I'm not exactly sure the two differences there. So I believe this summer they're going to be moving water across the face of that dam quite a bit, and they may not be able to help as well with our thoughts they're going to have it all on possibly the trap side.
So I talked to Lisa McLaughlin, and she told me less than a month ago that the right-hand roll gate, so so looking downstream, the one that's on the opposite side from where the ladder trap is, would not be operated. It's broken.
Right. Well, the deal with that is that just in the last week, it was even in the newspaper, you changed the newspaper, that EWEB has agreed to repair these down. I think FERC, from what I heard from the guys at the operators, FERC has said, you're doing this, you know, so they're going to repair each roll gate in the next, starting, I believe, next week or something, and start getting each one of them up to speed. So I don't know exactly what that'll do for operations, though, Cam. I'm not really sure.
So the way I'm assuming that Lisa was aware of that when she talked to me.
Yeah, I mean, not a month ago. They didn't know.
This is really recent.
Yeah, this just happened. Yeah.
Great. So the issue there is that we want to entrain fish over on the ladder trap side, not on the just the ladder side. And the way it had laid out a few weeks ago is that most of the water would be in the middle or far left, and that we should get more fish in the trap. It doesn't delay fish movement upstream, but it decreases the efficiency of the trapping operation that flows migrate across the dam to the far side.
From the conversation I had, it sounds like they're going to maintain the lake level. The kind of operations will be all right. It's just going to be whatever they're going to do to repair those gates. I'm not sure what the flow patterns will be, but it could be not quite what we were thinking.
The plan that's laid out right there basically is we watch the fish counts of clipped and unclipped fish carefully. There'll be a drop probably sometime in July, the total number of fish dropping precipitously. At that point, then we'll start operating the trap. We'll be handling small numbers of fish. Most of them will be hatchery origin finclip fish. So we'll remove the finclip fish, transport them to the hatchery or deal with them otherwise, and pass any unclip fish that happen to be in the trap. If the counts increase so that, and I had to come up with some sort of threshold or decision point, if the count of unclipped fish exceeds the count of clipped fish, then we stop the trapping operation, allow free passage, and keep watching until we see that count of clipped fish go up above the count of unclipped fish. Projecting, based on guesses on with the flow that I understood was going to happen a few weeks ago, we thought we would get 100 plus hatchery origin fish out of that trapping operation if we operated it, starting probably sometime late in July through August and September. But now I have to rework that. I don't know what Lisa tells me.
Yeah. So Lisa's on the HMT coordination group, and EWIP's kind of a player in all of this. The way that I see it, with this team here, the hatchery management team, with the different agencies and folks represented here, we can make a recommendation to EWIP. We can pull them into the loop here and say, hey, NIMS, ODFW, Corps, Fish and Wildlife Service, if they ever show up, are suggesting that you change or maybe alter your construction strategy here. I think that's something that this group...
One of my best friends is the hydro generation manager at EWIP. I was just with him all week long.
Yeah.
I think in this case it's been taken out of their hands a little bit.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of the thoughts I got too.
Yeah, that FERC has kind of stepped in and said, okay, we gave you guys a chance. Now we're telling you what to do. So I think some of it's been taken out of their hands a little bit. I'm not saying we shouldn't make that recommendation.
Yeah.
We still should, so they're aware. But they may come back and say to us, hey, this is kind of out of our hands.
Do they consult with you guys, NIMS, on that?
Probably, but it would be like Melissa.
Okay.
But one thing is, I don't know what the construction period is, but one of the things could be that they do the right side first, so that's fixed. The opposite.
River right fixed now while mostly wild fish are moving.
Yeah.
And then switched to river left
during the
flow,
latter part of the season.
Ladder.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would be trapping mostly clip fish.
So we should follow up with them. Yeah.
That's kind of what I'm getting at, is there may be some flexibility that they could choose in between
the order.
Yeah.
Okay.
We can make a
recommendation. Well, I was planning on calling Lisa, but I don't want to make that call. But if
so,
you talk to
Andy,
Melissa,
if you write that up in a memo of coordination, and then everybody can comment on it, and then you could send that to EWEB and have that documentation that this is the recommendation from the regional body.
Yeah, that'd be great. I will do that.
Hey, Cam, got some questions. Is the trapping operation, when you're trapping, is it 100% essentially?
In that ladder.
In the ladder?
Correct.
If both ladders operate, are some fish bypassing?
Correct. So if both ladders operate, whatever fish go on river right will get upstream unmolested. only fish moving on River Left. That was the key, was that Lisa told me that we could focus fish movement through River Left and get our hands on a larger number of fish.
Okay. I didn't see any consideration of PSM in the protocol or kind of in how you developed this. Thinking about what ODFW used to do at Bennett before a new ladder was in place, that caused high pre-spawn mortality at a dam low in a watershed like Leeburg. And that was a key concern, I think, for not putting a sorter in, was delay and potential pre-spawn mortality associated with trapping and sorting fish at Leeburg. So I would think that would be important to consider in your protocol and how you would...
We did consider it, but the trouble is that if things go just as they have in the past, we'll end up handling a relatively small number of unclipped fish. So the issue would be then, if the unclipped fish get tagged or something, and then my pre-spawn mortality survey people are out there looking for them, there might be only 50 or 25 unclipped fish that would receive a tag and get passed upstream. Those are the fish that would be subjected to any kind of insult that might cause pre-spawning mortality. I'd have to actually find out what can we learn from recovering the 2 to 4 carcasses from those tagged fish to speak to pre-spawning mortality. And that's not a tractable test. If the sample size ends up being 4 fish, because I only recover about at best 20% of the carcasses that spawn above Lieber.
Yeah, no, I'm not raising it as more of a test opportunity, but a concern.
A monitoring opportunity.
No, more of the concern of the fact that the trapping operation will put additional stress on some wild fish.
True.
And that concern has been raised in the past. And so what you kind of laid out to begin with, that you don't expect that many, seems like that should be discussed in here, just based on... There's no mention of pre-spawn mortality in the paper. Okay.
So mention it, but, I mean, the argument is that...
Point out that because of past experience, you don't expect that many wild fish, given the way that this will play out, unless this new E-Web construction issue means only one ladder is being operated and you're trapping the entire run, and that's more of a concern then, obviously.
I don't think they can shut down the ladders, period.
Yeah, that's the...
Those ladders are running at all times. All they can do is change the flow regime through the main foulway there, the river. And if that flow comes out on one side or the other, that's the ladder that the fish will preferentially use.
Okay, so, just wanted to raise it, because you're doing this operation when summer temperatures are going to be naturally high, and then this year, low flows are going to confound potential stress on the fish. So any of those wild fish, I would think this group has raised that issue in the past. Pre-spawn mortality is a concern for dealing with fish trapped at Leeburg.
Okay.
So related to that, the reason why we are supportive of this versus what we used to do, were several things. So this is just the tail end of the run, trying to get 100 fish, you know, that target, not trying to weed every hatchery fish out of the dam. And then third is the run size. So the run sizes this year are going to be low. You know, when we thought, when we discontinued the trapping years ago, it was back in 03, 04, 05, where there was 10,000 fish going over Leeburg, and it was a disaster, and everybody was in agreement. We got to shut this thing down. So this situation is entirely different than kind of old operations and old trapping, and it's pretty select. So that's why NIMS feels comfortable with it more than the other things that we've done in the past.
Are you guys, do you permit this as an operation?
Yeah, it's covered.
Is there take kind of considerations in how you deal
with
it?
Yeah, it's covered under the hatchery stuff. You know, it's in the HGMP.
Have you guys discussed any protocols if you see pre-spawn, or if you see a particular level of stress, not pre-spawn mortality?
Yeah, that was some of the comments, the reporting requirements and some of the loss stuff in there. Yeah, that'll be in there.
I mean, it's kind of pick your poison a little bit here.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
So we got two major concerns here. We got the PHAS issue, and we got pre-spawning mortality, and neither of them's good. And I think what we're saying here is that, yeah, I mean, that's not a good trapping. It's not an ideal, those of us that have done it. But I think it's, given the environment, given the climate, given everything that's going on in the basin, I think we're saying that it's better to try to trap these fish out, knowing there'd be a potential small impact to wild fish versus not doing it. You know, and that's a trade-off.
Anywhere, that's
it's a trade-off.
Good place to do it. We've got a good long history of very low pre-spawning mortality in the river reaches for wild fish above the South Fork Camp, but above Lieber, pre-spawning mortality is routinely quite low. So, I'll write that in and redistribute, but we're preparing now to get on the ground, starting now, really. We're watching the counts very carefully, but no earlier than July 1st, and it's in the outline. I don't expect we'll be starting July 1st. I think we'll be starting late in July to do anything.
So to remind folks on this particular action, this was one of the actions in the suite of alternative actions that NIMS and the Corps agreed to in lieu of the building the sorter to reduce PHAS according to the RPA and the biop. So there was four or five actions. This is one of those that our agencies had agreed on.
I remember the plan that you had written. I don't know if we ever totally had agreement on it, but I'm not disagreeing to say this needs to stop here. So I'm just raising the concern about.
Well, it's in the HGMP, so it's okay. Part of it.
And I think it's good to document that issue in CAMS.
Yep.
I mean, it's inherent to that. I mean, the timing is mindful of that. All that's mindful of the pre-spawning mortality issue. So if we just document it, mm-hmm. it's a good thing to do.
Lance, you were kind of talking about a target of 100 fish, but it sounds like from reading CAM's document, 100 or more. So once we hit that 100, are we going to stop? Or
my inclination is to keep trapping. If we can get 100 fish out there with no measurable impact on wild fish, just small numbers, if everything goes beautifully, mm-hmm. and I pull 300 hatchery fish out of that trap, I'm doing it. That would just be a boon. When we did the original modeling of PHAS control in the Mackenzie River under the worst possible scenarios. If we could have pulled 300 fish out of the Lieber trapping operation in past years, in some of those years we would have had 10% PHAS or less in the basin. 300 fish is not a lot of fish. It's 2 days worth at a hatchery. So I could just see it happening. If we get a little luck and can kind of keep operating the trap without hurting any wild fish, we can pull out more than 100. The target's 100, because that's what the model says.
And when we reach 100, if we get there, which I believe we will, that time period is going to dictate, we can keep going, because then it's mostly hatchery fish. You know, I mean, right. If later in the season, it's mostly hatchery fish.
Yeah.
So it would make sense just to keep going.
So. All right. Any other further comments on this? Cam, you're going to make some changes?
Yeah, very quickly. Just small changes, and I'll give it out to the group.
Okay.
Can you kind of wrap up what the decision was there then?
We need to get some language in here articulating how we're addressing the issue of potential pre-spawning mortality on wild fish, and I'll do that by expressing the historical record of the small numbers of wild fish that we anticipate handling and have handled in the past this late in the season. Then I'll probably pull together the pre-spawning mortality estimates that Kirk and others have generated above Lieberg Dam for the last 12 years and demonstrate even when the trapping operation was in place, pre-spawning mortality is not a very significant issue.
Okay, cool, thanks.
How about any mechanisms if temperature is above a certain level? Is that already accounted for in any take permitting?
Don't know. Temperature thresholds. That's a definite limit for handling fish in our permit. So I think it's 22, 23 degrees.
I'm really surprised if we're going to bump up against those in Mackenzie. That's the one thing we got to hand for some Mackenzie.
Yeah, you add that though, just because it could happen. I mean, this is a weird year.
If there was a year, this would be the end.
Yeah. All right. Anything else on that one? I want to be respectful of your guys' time. time. We've got a little bit more than an hour before noon, but do you want to talk about your stuff now, or is it okay if we stick to the schedule? And
it's okay to stick to the schedule.
Okay, I don't want to monopolize your entire day here. All right. Okay. Cougar, additional samples for some of the 2014 and future genetic analysis. Rich, do you want to kick this one off?
I can try and get us started. I came mostly because I work in the RM&E team. I chair the RM&E team for water, and it's where we fund CRFM-related research. And pedigree work has been funded through CRFM, so that's how the link in is for me primarily. And I emailed a couple of questions to the group because I haven't been involved in the discussions that you've been having at this team. And those were, first, you know, what are the issues with the existing data for cougar pedigree so we can understand where the data needs are? And then the second, how would additional data be used? We have a data set, a database, if you will, different kinds of information coming in, pedigree included, trap information included. So I would like to hear a discussion about what is the current data set that we're looking at when we're considering changes to the transport and what I'm calling recycling program or protocol at Cougar. And then that's where I'd like to start the discussion myself and see so we can understand what the data need is. And then further discussion of if that new data is analyzed, how will we apply it to make a decision? And Lance, you shared some information late yesterday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I threw down some thoughts just in a one-pager that hopefully everybody has available. But I think in a nutshell, what the way I see it is, so we've had 2 years of complete data, 12 and 13 from the pedigree results, and we're using those studies to inform management decisions over the last years. So they've been absolutely critical to help manage the trap and the hatchery supplementation above cougar. And what we're really wanting is to continue that study over the long term, so have 14 samples analyzed, and then 15 and onward. And I kind of laid out the reasons why in that one pager. But it's really, I mean, we're just starting the study and starting to get the valuable data from it to assess the two objectives that we had originally laid out. And so that now is not the time to stop funding it, is to continue it over multiple years.
Well, could you explain the management objectives again, the two?
I'm sorry, Rich, can you speak up a little bit?
Yeah, sorry.
So originally the way we had laid it out was, one, the first objective was just to be able to monitor natural production above the dams, as that being the telltale to see how successful things are being, because that's the only way to do it. Is by pedigree analysis to see what fish are produced above cougar versus below. But then secondly, and I think it tends to get dropped out, but it was really to evaluate the success of hatchery and wild fish on the spawning grounds and their ability to produce progeny into the future. And so right now we're at the point on the dates, and my dates are correct, we're just now getting to the point where we would start addressing that second objective of being able to evaluate the two different types of fish. So those returns start in, what, 15, 16, 17, I believe, if that's right.
Yeah.
14.
Hey, Lance, in the purpose of evaluating the reproductive success of hatchery origin fish and then comparing it to natural origin is what?
So that's Mark's study, so go for it, Mark.
Well, for one, it's an RPA in the biop to compare the reproductive success of those hatchery and wild fish. I think that helps to inform us as to which the most effective strategies for establishing a self-sustaining population above cougar. It helps to inform what ratios of hatchery and wild fish that we should be moving up there,
So to add to that,
which sexes, when, how, you know, I think there's a lot of management implications just for the transfer program, and Rich and I talked a little bit about this, and but I also think it bleeds over into downstream passage long term. And it doesn't mean we'd have to do something this year, but down the road, we're going to want that information to evaluate downstream passage down the road. I think there's real implications for how we're managing the traps, and I see a bigger tie on these pedigrees than I do some of the other work we're doing in the basin, quite frankly, on adults. And I think there's real value there.
In the Army team, we have continued to discuss we would be collecting these samples and continuing to analyze them, but not this year because we didn't understand an immediate need. But what I have begun to hear and started in February, Jeff sharing, we want to see some analysis because it could inform how we're doing this recycle program. I thought that was the immediate objective, unless I've missed it. Is that correct?
I think that's one of the primary. Lance laid out some of the bigger
pictures. Well, the bigger picture stuff, monitoring natural production, we can continue to do. It's not an immediate need because we're under replacement, and we're not going to exceed replacement until we make a change at the dam. So additional analysis right now will not inform an immediate management need, as far as I can see.
I think what I would say to that is each and every year we're reviewing the pedigree studies, and of the 2 years, they're showing different scenarios, and based off of that, that helps guide, you know, where fish are going from the trap, but also the hatchery supplementation effort, too. So each and every year, it's been a little bit different, and we're using the information to help inform both of those things, what's going on at the trap and what we need to do on the hatchery supplementation piece. Well, and then the third piece is the impacts to wild fish below cougar as a key concern. So I didn't really get into the details on the one pager, but 1 year we had quite a few unassigned wild fish coming back to cougar, and in another year it was pretty low. And that is a growing concern, the impacts of, you know, mining out those wild fish, particularly the last year or two, as we have really low counts of wild fish.
So are you saying the pedigree analysis each year could inform changing how the thresholds are perceived?
It has. It has informed management strategies and what we've been doing at the trap and for hatchery supplementation.
And I would add there, actually, that it can sometimes be difficult, Rich. I think you're right on to ask those questions. What will be the management implication of the information that we get? But it can also be very difficult to predict what we'll learn and how we'll use it. In fact, we had no idea that we would be seeing this shift in the rate of fish assigning changing throughout the course of the season. That wasn't even a research objective, but it was information that came out of the data that we gathered. And now it's hugely affecting the way we manage fish at that trap. So in this first year, 2014, that we got adult returns from hatchery and wild fish, there may be patterns within those data that we couldn't predict to see that could impact the way we manage fish at the trap.
I can appreciate that, but there's a number of studies in the Willamette that each year we're learning as we go, and we're not nearly done with the story. I agree the data set is valuable and should continue. What I'm hearing, though, also, which is new to me, is we're willing to make quick changes. And, like, I'm not sure what you guys were referring to in the last couple of years where we've made changes using the data other than establishing the recycle program. But are you saying we would also change the thresholds above McKenzie that were established a couple of years ago, the 400, 200 ratio?
There's nothing that I know of a reason why we would change that, but I don't know,
what are the other aspects then would you expect to change? Because I think the overall goal is to use hatchery fish to help reestablish Chinook upstream, but we want to pull the gas pedal off as soon as we reach a reasonable number of wild returns coming back to cougar. And do the details matter in between? In terms of
I would agree with that, Rich, except for we have nothing on the drawing board for getting downstream passage, and no replacement, I don't think this is anywhere near the time that you pull back on your gas pedal.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
agreed.
That's after we have something built and we have some kind of downstream passage established that's adequate. The other thing that I would add to this is that we don't have a clue how many of the 191 fish that we passed upstream there last year were actually fish from the main stem McKenzie on a population that was extremely low last year. And that number is, I think, is important. If we're mining that South Fork population, main stem population of wild fish, and not getting replacement on those fish, we're doing that fish a disservice.
And that's really the heart of the issue that we discussed this season, where having the 14 samples would have been helpful, is those wild fish that are shown at the trap, the cougar fish, the unassigned, how they're spread out through the run, that information would be extremely helpful in helping management this year. Whether we keep the September 1 cutoff date, whether we're recycling all wild fish throughout the whole run, I mean, having the 14 would have helped inform that.
Okay. Jeff,
I think to Jeff's point about being worried about the 191 fish and not getting replacement, you're right. We're not going to get replacement the way we're continuing to operate until we do have some kind of downstream passage. I don't think that's going to change dramatically. But so my question, Jeff, was, I mean, are you concerned that we're putting wild fish up there, period, I mean, regardless of what their origin is? Absolutely. No, not the fish that come from up there. I mean, the fish that are progeny of the hatchery fish, I don't have an issue with. The ones that we're mining out of the South Fork and the main stem, yeah, I have a big issue with that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, those 2 years of data, they look pretty compelling to me, and they also look similar to me, but maybe I don't read these graphs very well and read the data very well, but Mark, I mean, you were an author of this paper, and it seems like, in general, the results for 2012 and 13 were very similar, with, having most of the fish signing, in the 80-85% rate before September 1, and the rest of those afterwards. And so, as a result, we made that adaptive management change, and it seems to be working pretty well.
How do you know? You don't have replacement on those fish. How can you say it's working?
He's talking about the recycling program.
The recycling program, trying to ensure that you weren't putting fish from down below up above. I think that's the component that's working.
I disagree with that, because we moved like 40 unmarked, unassigned fish up above Cougar in 2012. That's not acceptable.
Yeah. That wasn't the protocol in place in 12. It was in 13.
Right. Yeah, it was not.
And that's when only 7 of the 15 released above Cougar after September 1st were not produced above the dam but moved up.
So the heart of the issue in my mind, what you guys are discussing, goes to that figure 8 of the report. And so the pattern looks similar, but the magnitude of the numbers that we're talking about were greatly different. And that's a key issue in my mind. So in 13, you had just a handful of non-Cougar fish that went above Cougar, but in 12, the prior year, you had, like Jeff saying, I think it was more than that. You had 40, 50, 60 fish, wild fish, that were not Cougar fish in the early part of the run that went up above. So the September 1 threshold did not work that year very well, and 2, it was a significant number of unmarked fish.
Do you think it's important to consider the contribution of fish that originated from above Cougar contributing below the dam and how this would be managed? I mean, at Foster, there's some contribution of 15%.
Well, that will be the case. That's something we can't control or manage.
No, but I would think you would factor it in that you can afford to have some fish going upstream that originated from downstream, knowing that some of the production from upstream is going to be down there, and in fact it's healthy for fitness in the population.
It is, but I think the difference is having the information to inform decisions on those fish that show up at the trap and the number of them. And if we can put them where they need to be, that's, I think, the heart of the issue on how we would apply the results.
Okay. The Corps is willing to fund it, but we need to have a better understanding of how the data would be applied, the decision framework, because we can't just go and get data and keep getting data without an understanding of how it would be applied in a management framework. And so thinking about thresholds in terms of what you would do with the information.
Well, there is an alternative, and that was that you just, when the fish come to Cougar Trap, you recycle them all downstream, and if they come back to the trap, you bring them upstream. And that's acceptable to me, because that was one of the original plans that we had for Cougar Trap, 15 years ago. So we don't have to do the analysis, but at the same time, we probably shouldn't be moving wild fish up there unless they are destined to go up there, and that we give them two strikes to go up.
So we sort of pay either way under that scenario. So
pay for
so
one.
You guys don't pay for the study, but I pay for increased O&M costs at the facility, because we're going to double the amount of transports. And the way I do transports is through a maintenance program. So they bill me directly. So whatever time a guy is spending at that facility, then they bill the O&M section fisheries for that work. So if we double the transport costs, then we, Corp pays. We don't just not do the study, and it's free. So just so people are aware, I mean, we'll pay one way or the other, essentially.
But I want the data.
I want the data of the fish below the dam too. Yeah. Yes. I think if we're going to do it, I'd like to. I think you're right on. We should add that component too, because I do think it would color our thinking about what we might do there.
Well, that's all I'm asking at this point. I appreciate the discussion. We see value in this information, but to move ahead this year with this additional analysis, we want to understand more about the decision framework. What are the decision points? For example, if the new data set shows a similar pattern, a proportion of the late run in September the majority are from downstream, would we continue the same protocol? If we see a shift, that there's actually more fish coming in earlier in the summer, would we change the protocol? So what would be the proportion you're looking for? Is it greater than 20% of the run? When I was talking to Cam last week, that number came up. What is the threshold for making a decision? That has to be established before we go off and pay for more information on this.
I don't know about that, but because that's what we changed it up. Last year's management was different than the year before, to try to come up with some criteria right now to continue to fund the study. I don't think that's necessary.
It is for the core.
So you're applying that standard to all RM&E.
I'm not saying I'm throwing out the right standard, but I'm asking for a decision framework on the pedigree work. And we're trying to set up these studies in each of these drainages now. And they inform reintroduction for a lot of the reasons you shared. But if we're establishing, say, thresholds for supplementation, and we're then trying to pull the gas pedal up in terms of how many wild returns come in, I think that's the framework. How is this new data going to change how that threshold is applied? Or this trapping protocol to recycle fish early in the season?
Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to think about that. I mean, okay. It makes sense to do that, but we shouldn't be applying it that kind of thinking just to this one study. We should be applying it to all RM&E studies throughout the whole basin.
Well, some of our studies are just to begin the information train coming in. This is something we've been working on for a while, and we have established an approach, but now there's some questions about that. We're thinking there might be some variability that wasn't captured in the past. So we should be able to understand what's the management implication of this new data.
Okay. Well, we have two data points.
Two data points. 2 years, 2012 and 13. Yep. They both show September 1st and later. The majority are from downstream, but before that time of the year, the majority were cougar fish.
So two data points. It could be like this. It could be like this. It could be like this.
I think it's something that, I mean, I think Lance said this earlier, that we're just beginning to get this information, and it's not something that you want two data points to make your decision and then come back in 10 years and see, run those samples and find out that if you'd had three more data points, maybe the pattern is not that consistent year to year to year. And as you can have a framework in place, and the data might show you something completely different. You have to adapt to the data you see in front of you, kind of like Mark was saying. If we'd started this study and made some decision thresholds prior, we probably wouldn't have even thought to look at the date to start recycling those fish. But once we saw the data, we made a decision based on what was in front of us. And I think it's possible in this third year or fourth year that we would see a shift in how these fish are returning. And we might want to change something that we hadn't predicted at the outset. I think it's somewhat short-sighted not to.
And we have something new and interesting coming back in this 2014 collection, and that is we can learn whether the wild fish that we moved up there produced more adults than the hatchery fish or not. Unfunded, unknown.
I think you burned to death and have the same point others made. I agree. But again, we think it's critical to have a decision framework in place. It can be adapted in the future as we learn more. But we know enough now to have, and we already do have a management protocol in place. So if we're going to be changing that with data, we should have an understanding of how that data will be applied to do so. So if the group could come back with that, or particularly the fish agencies who would like to make the change, we'd be ready to move ahead and fund that if we can...
How about this as a place to move forward? Because it's not entirely satisfactory, and I recognize that, but most of us were actually pretty pleased with the outcome from 2012. If we had kept the numbers of unassigned fish, fish we were pretty sure produced below, down, and I don't remember what it was like 20 fish or something like that. For now, we use that as our decision threshold. That's the lower boundary of the number of fish that we shouldn't have put up above cougar that we have in our hand right now. A lot of us are not satisfied with the 40 or 50 fish that we think we mined on the lower river population and put upstream. But at the time, we were pretty pleased with the performance of the experiment and monitoring from that first year. So if we could agree just for now, for this cycle, that that's the threshold we're looking at to decide whether we're going to change this year's late season. What's it? What is the new? I like this. I like
late season late downstream.
Late season downstream passage. The LSD. Then that will be our interim threshold. That's our decision point for now. We're not married to it, but it's one that we were pleased with it the first year. That's all I got. We don't have a great biological nail it. This is the biologically relevant amount of downstream mining that we'll accept, but we do have that. And it kind of gets to your point. Okay, it could be this, but if it was this, that makes it our working threshold for now.
Yeah,
and just move forward from there.
And if we're moving beyond disposition tables to these frameworks and things like that, I do want to apply them based on what I want to apply them to Fall Creek. I want to apply them because I look at what we're doing at Fall Creek and I scratch my head. I got to be honest with you. I mean, it's like, what are we doing there? There's no management implications to it. None. We haven't changed one thing we're doing there. And don't plan to. Based on information we keep collecting over and over and over again. Now, we're trying to learn something more about our fish and moving in a different direction and put some genetic data. But I got to be honest, when I look at that around the basin, I kind of scratch my head. And yet, this study, we've actually applied, and we have made some management changes there. So I
speak a little louder, please. Yeah, I get about two out of every three words from you, Greg.
That's what I'm trying to make it for you.
I can fill in the blanks then, right?
What I'm saying is, if we're going to do this, then let's apply it to all the studies that are out there, mm-hmm. and that we're gonna take that same sort of really careful look, and set up this framework, and
and evaluate, because I question what we're doing with some of our pre-spawning mortality work, quite frankly. And so I don't think we can just apply it to this particular situation and say, okay, at Cougar we're gonna put all these things in place, but everywhere else it's kind of freewheeling and fancy, and we just do whatever we want. You know, we've got disposition tables, we've got all these things. And like I said, we're gonna pay. If the concern is about money, we're gonna pay one way or another for that alternative approach. So
along those lines, so Rich, were you asking for a budget number for how much it would cost to do the pedigree for the 2014? I think I heard that. I have those numbers that would be useful.
I have a pretty good sense, but sure, if you could share it.
It's so to do the 2014 trap and haul adults and the carcass samples, it would be $29,329. It's a budget. So I'm a co-PI on the project with Michael Bank. So we just worked up those numbers in case it would be useful for this discussion.
So the other thing that's kind of troubling to me on all this study, funding this study, and then all of the other pedigree studies is, this information is essential to guide management at all of the reintroduction areas. So Middle Fork, Cougar, Santee Ams, North Santee Ams. And you know, the discussions that we've had were these would be ongoing studies year after year after year for a generation or two to get a feel for what's going on. And to have you know, the Corps saying now, after 2 years, well, you know, we don't want to continue funding, you know, that's of concern to all of the pedigree studies throughout the whole basin for all of the reintroduction areas.
Well, that's not what we have been saying. I hadn't heard that there's been expectation of funding these year after year. We want to fund studies that perform management needs that we have in front of us. There is expectation we need multiple years here. I got that. But what we've been saying over the last year and a half for Cougar is we don't see any immediate management needs to analyze the data. We would be continuing to collect it and planning to analyze it when a big management need is there. We expected that to occur when we made a passage change. Maybe there's a need here in front of us. But all I'm asking at this point is we need to establish how we'd apply this new information, because there is a management protocol in place. It's not like general RMNE that was informing a design or some basic baseline information. We've got the baseline. We're trying to apply new information from what I hear to potentially make a change. How will that be applied? That's all I'm asking. If that could be established, maybe as Cam suggested, brief write-up on how we would look at that data and if a threshold could be identified, that would be perfect.
Well, we should, at least our agencies should have the broader discussion of all these pedigree studies throughout the basin.
I think it'd be great, because I think it allows us to establish better understanding of the reintroduction program and kind of work towards those other thresholds and these other drainages. We'll probably talk around that in a moment here with North San Diego.
Exactly. That's a great thing for all of us to keep in mind as this North San Diego discussion comes forward. We're sitting on the cusp of probably some of our changes. And how long out into the future we really do what kinds of studies to help inform those decisions.
So to summarize, it sounds like there is pretty good consensus within HMT that analyzing samples from 2014 at Cougar is beneficial to
and beyond
to management decisions and to how that trap is operated. So I think HMT as a body can say that, unless there's anyone that disagrees. Okay. And then along with that, working on developing some kind of framework for putting these studies and this data to use. Kind of like what Rich is getting at and what Cam suggested here. I think commitment to try to flesh some of that out would be good as well. Does that seem fair? With the understanding that, like Mark was saying, that we can't always know what decisions or what recommendations will come out of the data that we haven't collected yet. Sometimes you might be surprised by something.
I guess, you know, folks should take a crack at that, what that would be, but make sure our hands aren't tied on any of the numbers and the thresholds and all of that, because who knows what the information would suggest. and we wouldn't want to be bound to some threshold that we picked right now, not knowing what the information is in the future.
Right.
So that would be my main concern.
Would you say that's how you would apply a PHAS standard for the drainage as well? I mean, we have to have some reasonable expectation on how a decision can be made in order to fund a study.
Yeah, but if...
But if you're saying, no, we're not bound to anything, then it's useless.
Well, so, like, you pick a number, 20 fish. Yeah, that sounds good right now, but what happens next year when our Lieber count is X?
Well, the decision framework can allow for change.
That's my point.
You could describe that the run variability each year needs to be analyzed for 3 years to be confident in whatever.
Okay, I'm just saying that there has to be a way out for unforeseen circumstances, information, all of that. You know, because we're just picking a number out of the air just to try to satisfy what you're saying we need to continue to fund the study.
I don't think so. I mean, you look at the data that we already had, it was pretty convincing that after September 1st, there was a big difference. If you see a difference in that, you should be able to discuss a change. If not, then it would expect it to be
status quo. That is true, but I think the heart of the issue is the unassigned fish prior to September 1. That's what we're trying to get a handle on.
Yeah, if you could just describe how you'd apply the data, we could fund the study. But that's all we're asking for. I don't think a big write-up. It could be fairly straightforward.
The other thing to consider this year is downstream of the dam, you might have a set of conditions that are not ideal. So that's going to be, if temperature control stops in July, you're going to see something completely different this year. Not only in terms of collection, but maybe success downstream of the dam as well.
Okay, all right. Well, obviously, more discussion to come on this. Rich, do you think it's likely that we could analyze the 2014 sample for next year for making management decisions about collection and operation?
Well, if we move ahead, even in February, we knew that it wasn't going to be possible to analyze and inform this year.
Right.
And so any analysis that could be done at this point would inform next year's.
I'm sorry. Is it possible that the 2014 samples could be analyzed this year to help us inform decisions as early as August?
So you want the data by August 2015? Very possible.
So the answer is, if the money was available now, we could have data in hand that would help inform the decisions for this year's actions.
We have to add into the processing of the contract and getting approval for funds.
Yeah, I think we had already agreed to pass H&T's that kind of passed that point for getting it in hand. Yeah. Wait, now, my point is, it would be silly if we didn't have it in hand for next year.
Yeah. Next year would be one of those.
Well, yeah. And the 15 samples too.
If we got.
Mm-hmm. But I'm sorry to say it again, we need to hear back from the fish agency on how the info would be applied. What's the decision framework? Then we'll be much more able to move ahead, justify the funds.
Okay. Lance, is that something that you want to work on in addition to what you've already put together?
I'm not sure if I'm the appropriate one for that.
Okay.
But I would think it would be ODFW and NEVS.
I have to think about that.
Between the
two of you.
Okay. All right. Well, let's move on. Thank you very much for joining us today. Talk about the results from the North Sandy Amphibian Study. That study was sent out to this entire group, so they've all had a chance to read it, hopefully. Do you want to just give a brief recap, maybe the abstract or something, to help what you guys show?
I put together a couple of slides.
Okay.
Yes.
So, can I put that on your computer?
You can on this one, because it's a stupid government rule, but we could.
I just listened to you.
Put it on to that one.
The rest of the government's probably
it.
So basically, it's just the tables from the report that we have here in the PowerPoint. But I think the key about the report is why we really encourage people to read it, especially in terms of informing management decisions. There's a lot of caveats in terms of the.
Hi, sorry, this is Elise. I can't hear.
Hi, Elise.
Hi.
It's Kathleen. I was just saying why we're really encouraging people to read the report is because there's just a lot of caveats in terms of sampling both the outplants and adult offsprings and how it potentially affects, how it does affect the results and interpretation of those results. So in order, is it really possible to give a 5-minute summary of it and accurately capture all of those details? So basically we're here to help answer any questions about the report that are concerns, questions. So Melissa has prepared a few slides here, but basically for those who aren't in the room, they're just most of the tables from the report, so you're not missing anything. Just a discussion point.
Zero unmarked fish out of the trap and no steelhead on the first load.
And a load is 50 or 60 fish.
He's off.
That was it. Gotcha.
No rebuttal.
See you later.
Oh, hey, hey, was it 50 or 60 fish first load? So you're going to get 120 up?
Hey, what now?
How many are you outplanting today?
We're going to do 120, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
It's a long day.
The first load had no, there were, when they got the fish out, there were no unmarked fish in it. So that was very, kind of unexpected, actually.
You can always count on the middle fork for that. Yeah.
Can we have just 3 minutes to stand and stretch while the technical
things
are getting.
Yeah. Next.
I want to
take
five. Told you, actually, I was working for a living yesterday, putting a weir in. I'm sort of the touch. It was awesome.
Did you check with the plotter to see if that was the same thing?
I
told
you. I can't tell what's happening in the room. It's the beginning of the show. We're taking a short break to load the presentation.
Just break them all the way.
Okay, I'd just like to add that I thought this conversation was going to take place at 10, and I have to get off the phone at 12. Just FYI.
Oh, did I pass you?
Yeah,
right
when it was like coming in one lane, it was like.
Oh, that was you, huh?
It was me.
I didn't want to be late.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
I just told you.
No, I didn't see you, though.
The water situation.
That makes a good time. I'm surprised you didn't hear the word.
Can we delay aspects of commissioning down the road? Are we comfortable doing it or not comfortable doing it? What I heard back from people I was talking to was, yeah, we understand.
Yeah.
Here and
I
don't want to squander the water. Now, whether other people, either people changed their mind or additional discussion occurred.
And what I heard was Friday morning?
No, I actually took Friday off.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but next week? We're pretty open next week.
I wasn't privy to
Monday.
And I just took a look at, okay, what are the impacts? Forgetting the politics aside, what are the impacts?
So what are your initial thoughts on general comments I sent?
Minimal.
You're like, I think that was Mark.
So I was interested to get that out to water for the review, so I wanted to go over a few things with you. Comments that I think.
I do.
Also, given that in the fish operations, there is a main experience.
Those were pulled comments. Comments in general.
So I wasn't not talking, haven't talked to you.
Well, that was my first issue. Comments were on the proposal, not on the.
But my email references those issues.
We did.
Carried into how.
So basically, they laid out the plan. I presented.
So that was
a while. Looking at your own survival.
Listen, I'm not kidding, but I've taken so many trips.
Problem.
I agree with that.
So instead of trying to figure out
any experiment,
June 1st goes to be no.
I agree with caveat.
But well, we may take.
I'm not sure I agree with taking out all much.
If I were June 3rd,
no,
there'd be a ramp up to about 10 hours.
Well, that's what the doctor
said. And then a ramp back down.
Oh,
the ramp down would be.
My email, I think, said taking it back to
400.
Okay.
Because there's another test after that point where they have to run it at 400 for some sort of mission test that they're doing after that.
So,
but we can talk in detail.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's the main thing. Is I thought you guys were suggesting that we basically take this out of the report.
The core was here when we got here.
Well, yeah.
So
this could be
the future.
But I think it's fair to present these because they were the detections.
Sure, if it's wrong, then yeah.
And they're very consistent among the years.
Yes.
So that was my main thing.
I think we can get there then.
Okay.
I don't know if everyone will agree with me in house,
but do you think we have some
recording? No soundtrack for lots of reasons.
So I'll give you a call Tuesday or something like that. We can set up time.
Okay.
I'm still going to hold these feet to the fire on a field trip.
Yeah, please. I need to get out of that.
That's when we kind of said we're going to.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it does.
All right, folks, let's go ahead and make Rudy and Sylvie be part of this. Downs,
yeah. So I think if the ramp down is going to be very slow.
Thank you.
That'll be
okay. Okay, so okay. We submitted this report to you guys 4 weeks ago, having a hard time keeping track between the Seth and North Sanium projects, but we just thought it would be helpful to provide a quick overview of the data set that we were working with. And these are just tables taken directly from the report. So if you have the report, you should have it. It's not a pretty table by any means, but starting like in all of the other basins, tissue samples were collected from salmon in 2007. So
this is table one for those who don't know.
Yeah, table one from the report. And so those were hatchery origin outplants above Detroit. So that was the first year that we were using in our analyses to look for subsequent natural origin progeny recruitment back to the system. A couple of the issues with this data set were the closure of the Minto Fish Collection Facility in 2011 and 2012, and so we only had, those would have been two of the first years that we would be looking for natural origin progeny from 2007 and 2008. But we only had carcass samples to work with in those years, so our sample sizes are relatively low. So you can see on the NOR column there, we actually have a hard time genotyping carcasses because a lot of the DNA is degraded from those samples. So we have relatively limited insight into the contributions of outplanting in 2007 and 2008 to subsequent natural origin recruitment to the system because of these issues. 2009, ultimately, we've determined is kind of the first year that we can get decent estimates of productivity of salmon outplants because their progeny would have come back. I'll switch to this next figure, which is big figure two in the report. But for 2009, we're looking for a progeny coming back in 2012, 13, and 14, and that would give us an estimate of total lifetime fitness for those outplants. 2012, again, is one of the years that Minto is closed, so we only have carcass samples, and it's only a small portion of the natural origin fish that returned to the North Sanium River in that year. So we don't have a good estimate of three-year-old progeny, but we should have a good estimate of four- and five-year-old natural origin progeny that came back that were kids of the 2009 outplants. another issue with the data set is that not all outplants were sampled in every year, so we have a subset of parents sampled. So for those parents, we can't assign progeny back, obviously, because we don't have a tissue sample to associate to individuals. So I think, I guess, one of the take-home points of this discussion is that a lot of our estimates are likely to be underestimates of productivity, just because we don't have all of the parents sampled, so we can't assign all of the progeny. So we really focused the report then on the 2009 reintroduced group, just because we feel like we have the best estimates of offspring returns for those fish. So these are, this is a breakdown, this is table 3, table 2, no, table 3 in the report. So there were actually 50 natural origin fish outplanted above Detroit, even though that's not the policy on the Narsanian River at this time. But I think they were radio tracked fish. So we did include those fish in our analysis. So they were possible 3-year-old progeny of salmon that were outplanted in 2007. And we in fact did find that there were a couple of fish that assigned as offspring of 2007 outplants, but not very much information obviously on that from that year. 2011, again, we were just looking at carcasses, and there were also some fish that were included in a disease challenge experiment that were sampled at Bennett Dam. And so we looked to see whether those fish were progeny of salmon that were outplanted in 2007 and 2008. And it looks like about 35% of those fish overall were progeny of those parents. 2012, carcass samples, not very many of those fish assigned. 2008 would have been the primary brood year that would have contributed to that cohort. 2008, if you look back at that first table, it was kind of a funny year. Only 10 females were actually sampled, so we have relatively little insight, I think, into that brood year's contribution to subsequent recruitment. So again, another sort of caveat, I guess, of this study. In 2009, now we're seeing the new Minto reopened in 2013. In 2014, it was operational. We can see that actually quite a few of the NOR fish that returned to Minto assigned as progeny of salmon that were outplanted above the dam, of Detroit Dam in previous years. So about 60 to 65% in those years were progeny of outplants. So we use these assignments calculate estimates of fitness for salmon outplants. So again, for the 2007 and 2008 brood years, we have really, I think, very, very significant underestimates of fitness, just because we don't have good estimates of recruitment back to the system by NMR fish. So those mean fitness estimates for the 2007 and 2008 cohorts, I think, aren't really very useful data beyond saying that there was some production above the dam. But as far as like an actual quantity or metric of production, I don't think we can use those numbers. For the 2009 cohort, you can see that on average, females produced around 3 progeny to the female upplants, but males only produced about 0.5 progeny. You can see though that this year the sex ratio was incredibly skewed towards males, so it was about a 5 or 6 to 1 male to female sex ratio. So I really think that females were the limiting factor in this outplant year. In 2010, the ratio of males to females was closer to 1 to 1, and we're seeing more similar mean fitnesses in that year. And I think the 2015 data are analyzed, I think we'll probably see that likely holds if you look at total lifetime fitness. So again, looking at that 2009 brood year, we've now calculated a cohort replacement rate. So this is the total number of progeny produced by the total number of outplants. So there were 759 fish outplanted in 2009 that we were able to genotype. And of those fish, they produced 407 progeny. This is calculated for both males and females, so overall. But when we look at the female cohort replacement rate, so again, I mentioned that it's a skewed sex ratio. Females are likely the limiting sex in this year. The cohort replacement rate is actually just over 1. So 131 females that were released above the dam produced 141 female progeny that came back. So I think particularly in this system, given the sex ratio skews in this year, using a female cohort replacement rate is likely a better metric of productivity, because I think a lot of the males probably had no access to females to produce with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wanted to ask about that. I don't think you reported the overall male and female replacement rate in the other systems.
Yeah, we have a slide on this actually that we're going to touch on. Because I think Griff had mentioned to Kathleen that he was interested in. So it's Sesanian was a difficult. In 2007, we weren't able to calculate an overall cohort replacement rate because only 60%, I think, of the fish were sampled in that year. And trying to come up with what the actual denominator in that equation is would have been really difficult. So we could only calculate it for females. This is actually the comparison across sub-basins. So again, for North Sandia, we really have one data point, I think one fairly reliable data point at this time. For 2009, highly skewed sex ratio, female cohort replacement rate was around 1, but looking overall, it was half of that. In the South Fork Mackenzie, Nick went back and actually he had calculated an overall cohort replacement rate before, but didn't report it. And you see that they're actually very similar to what you see to the female-based estimate as well. And I think this probably reflects the less skewed sex ratios in large part.
Which metric do you think is most important?
That's a good question. And
I think you said for North Sandia, given
the... I think given the skewed sex ratio, including males in the calculation, probably significantly underestimates the mean success of an individual who spawned.
If I could chime in there a little bit.
Yeah.
And we took the same approach early on in Cougar when we saw in the early years of the outplanting program there highly skewed male sex ratios. We chose at that time to report the female.
Is someone asking a question?
Oh, sorry. I was turning around talking the other way. Well, I was just saying that at Cougar we used the same approach early on when we saw that the sex ratios were heavily male biased. We looked at the cohort replacement rate for the females, understanding that they were most likely limiting the production above the project. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, even, I mean, just biology itself, aren't females the driving factor here?
Yeah, I mean, that's, especially in a non-resource-based mating system like this, females are generally the limiting sex.
So if that's the case, how do you look at these when you have a more even ratio of males to females, what number do you interpret as being more important?
Well, we don't see a real difference, I guess. I'm not sure which number is more important, but based on our calculations, we don't really see much of a difference in terms of the...
I guess that's why I assumed you didn't report it previously in those other drivers.
Yeah, I actually, because I work primarily on the Sesanian, and we have those issues around sampling, incomplete sampling of males and females. We didn't calculate an overall estimate in 2007. We couldn't do that for 2008, so I did go back, and it's, you know, I'm sure those numbers are not statistically different, 1.16 versus 1.09. And also there's some new data coming up from 2009. A new cohort replacement rate estimate for 2009 in the Sesanian, we're seeing even higher cohort replacement rates, and these are all natural origin fish, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think the sex ratio really does, you know, it will skew. This is kind of, I guess, an overall reflection of how well, you know, on average, an individual who's reintroduced above the dam does. And there's a lot of males who don't reproduce above the dam. By including them in your calculation, you're going to really have a reduction in your cohort replacement rate estimates. So it's probably more conservative to just calculate it for females, I would think. But it might be worthwhile, if you can calculate it, to present both numbers and see overall what the picture looks like as well.
Elise, can you email this table when you get a chance?
Sure.
Hey, Elise, are you on the web meeting?
Yeah.
Can you see it right now?
I can.
Okay, mm-hmm. Good.
But it's not on the paper, so.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
This is something that Griff asked us to look at after we sent the report, so.
Yeah, because he picked up on the fact that he was wondering why in 2007 it wasn't calculated, and when you're trying to evaluate, look across systems and use this metric to determine what type of fish, natural origin, hatchery origin, outplant, you know, what should they rely upon? And so this was just a comparison, so you guys can see how the sex ratios play into this calculation.
Hey, one comment on that for the group, the cohort replacement rate, you know, we kind of get stuck on one as kind of a good situation, but in reality, it's important to keep in mind these are severely depressed populations, you know, really low numbers, and so we're wanting, you know, to recover the populations, so have replacement rates that are much greater than one, so we get recovery. And also important to keep in mind the kind of the absolute numbers that we're talking about. So for North Santiam, the numbers are pretty low compared to a South Santiam where you're talking, you know, high 500, 600, 700, 800, 1,000 maybe wild fish. So, you know, the replacement rate and absolute abundance, those two things are critical as we continue to work through this stuff, not just get hooked on, well, it's one, but there's a lot more to that.
Another table that, or graph that might be helpful, building on our cougar discussions, is something that shows over the course of the season which fish are assigning and not. My understanding.
Yeah, we have a lot of issues with the same, but. Yeah, we have a lot of issues with the data quality for the North Santiam. 2014 is pretty good, but 2013 was all batch sampling of individuals, so we don't have a good sense of when those samples were collected.
Actually, the batch samples will collect it over time, but separately by outline dates, so you should have an assignment date for each batch.
Yeah,
for each year going forward from this.
I'd have to look at the data that I was given, but yeah. Anyway, the data is being collected is getting better, but the North Santiam system, we had I have run the analysis for 2014, we don't see the same type of relationship, and I don't think we did in South Santiam either, so this second peak issue, and I've talked to Pamela, that's where you emailed you about this before, but it seems to be a real phenomenon that's occurred in the South Fork or McKenzie River, you don't quite see that peaking
second peak occurring in the other, in our data set anyway, from the other systems. So, like a second peak of hatchery fish coming back, or whatever, which I don't see, maybe because we're only working with natural origin fish. So, where I wasn't clear on that run timing throughout the run, we will get some of that information from the North Santiam or not, given the sampling?
Yes. In 2013 and 2014, we kept the batches separate.
Okay.
So you go back to the data and you can see that you'll have, you don't have individual fish samples, but you have batches by outplant data. Mm-hmm.
And did you say you're not seeing that segregation like in cougar?
We don't see that in South Santiam either, so it's not, it doesn't seem to be a phenomenon that occurs in those systems, at least not from the data that I have. So this is just the summary of the from the report, really. So for the two outplant years, so these are like samples that were outplanted above Minto in 2013-2014 natural origin fish. Looks like the majority of them were produced, those fish were produced above Detroit. And again, the caveat that these are probably minimum estimates just because we don't have complete sampling of parents in the previous years. For the 2007 and 2008 outplants, we found that about 15% of those fish produced progeny, but again, these are probably minimum estimates because of the incomplete sampling of progeny in subsequent years, 2011, 2012, due to Minto's closure. And if we compare 2007 and 8 to 2009, we're seeing much higher rates of the number of outplants producing NOR progeny or recruits back to the system, so about 30% overall 2009 produced progeny. And when we look at females, again, this limiting component of the population in that year, 64% produced at least one offspring in our pedigree. We saw that the fitness of females was highly variable, so up to 20 progeny were produced per outplant, but many individuals produced zero progeny. And female fitness was on average 5 times that of males, which probably, again, reflects the sex ratio bias. And our cohort replacement rate based on female replacement was around 1, but when you consider all outplant and salmon, it was half of that. So, so I think in summary, we have really kind of 1 year of data at this point to kind of get at cohort replacement rate estimates. And again, I think that's a little, still a little bit downwardly biased just because of the lack of sampling of live fish in 2012.
Could a source of that bias also be the catadromy, if there is any in Detroit Reservoir?
I don't know.
I mean, it is for cougar and...
Putting somebody science on it?
It could be freshwater production of adult fish that were parents of fish above Detroit. They weren't outplanted, they just grew up and got big and strong in Detroit.
I think the more likely contributions would be unsampled fish below the dam outplanted fish that weren't sampled in those early years. Because in some, I mean, we report some kind of guesstimates, I think, based on comparing some hatchery records versus outplant records. And I think in 2010, I think around 3,000 fish were outplanted, but around 2,200 were sampled. So it's a pretty large chunk of fish that weren't tissue sampled.
So on that issue, I think Mark actually assembled a table that I saw a couple years ago that had a compilation of all samples that were taken and a record of the fish that were outplanted by sex. So you know how many fish by sex weren't sampled, which leads me to guess that you could probably just essentially divide the sampling rate into the cohort replacement rate as an expansion for unsampled fish. Is there a reason you can't do that?
I don't know that those numbers, those are the table you shared quite some time ago. I don't know that they added up to what we've seen in some of the records.
Well, that's right. It's not.
Yeah.
We've found lots of different data sources and discrepancies since the time that I compiled that table. Some of that's right. But I think actually the greater issue is that I don't think you can really expect a linear relationship.
Right.
There's so much variance in reproductive success among out plants that within the first group that you sampled, you might have those 5 fish that produced 90% of your adult returns, and later on, you didn't get any such highly successful fish, right? So just that straightforward extrapolation an expansion like you're suggesting, I think is really prone to error in this case.
Overall, from reading this, it did seem like each of the shortcomings from the sampling regimen that happened going back in time, if they could have been corrected, would have, in all cases, increased fitness, and in all cases, we're probably underestimating most of the parameters here, which is, I mean,
so these are very conservative numbers, I think.
And the reason it's such an interesting topic, and probably the reason many people are here right now, is because those numbers are still pretty high.
Yeah.
Okay? That's obvious, so that's cool. There was one point that you didn't make here that I glommed onto instantly. It was the positive relationship between outplant timing and fitness. And one of my pet peeves right now is what's
the pre-spawn mortality
potentially. No, I don't think it was pre-spawn mortality necessarily, because my working hypothesis is that the spawning situation in the North San Diego above Detroit is driven by what happens in Horn Creek more than anything else. It's an incredibly densely packed spawning aggregate because that's on the hatchery grounds. And it would seem to me that if fish spawn early because they're up there early, and then fish are outplanted late, they'll go back there and they'll spawn on top of the fish that spawned early, and you'll have red superimposition and failure of the early reds. I'd love to look at that in more depth. But that might be something we might not be able to do, because
last guy wins.
We stopped that by blocking off access to Horn Creek. We started that last year. But very interesting to look to see whether
so in future pattern, years whether that pattern drops.
Which is a good way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That would require an investment in
long-term
well, and thinking of management implications down the road, too. I mean, at some point, we want to know, unmarked fish-wise, who's who. You know, who is from below and above the dam, and can we tease that out in some way? We may not ultimately be able to do that, but, man, it sure would be nice to be able to say.
If somebody's saying something, I can't hear it.
Sorry, it's me, the quiet one again. I was just saying, at least, that... Boy, down the road, it would be nice if we can get to the point where we get further clarity on who these unmarked fish are, you know, whether they're assigning to above and below the dam, and whether at Mincho will we get something that will allow us to manage those fish coming back in a way that we can put the fish that were from above Detroit. We may not get there. But it'd be nice to really mine this for as much as we can to see if there's something there, if there's some sort of trend there we can glom onto. Because mm-hmm. Ultimately, we want to pass those fish back up that were produced out there down the road. So, cool stuff.
You're probably not going to like this, but the key to that would be to actually pedigree using, as a parent base, the pre-spawn mortality or the carcass sample data from below Minto. For getting 10 or 20% of the carcasses back. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a needle in the haystack, but use those as in the parent pool and see what you're finding. It's not, with the above Detroit, we're sampling always 80 to 100% of the fish. In that case, it's 10 to 20% of the fish. That'd be really hard to do, but that might be the answer to it. Related to the pre-spawning mortality, I don't know quite how to, I know how I've been thinking about it, but as it turns out, in 2009, there was an unusually high pre-spawning mortality event, if you will, as far as the North San Diego is concerned. 14% of the fish that we sampled as carcasses were pre-spawn mortality females, and it's usually quite a bit lower than that. That happened to be a kind of a bump, and nobody paid any attention to it because the kind of the bumps that happen everywhere else are like 80 or 90% pre-spawn mortality. But in this case right here, that means that 14% of the females didn't actually make it to spawning and probably perished because of the way, in part, they were released off of high bridges into shallow water and went back in the truck. So I wouldn't count them among potential parents. I would just simply say that we don't do that anymore, first off. We don't do that anymore. Again, it's an example where there were actually fewer parents available to spawn. Mm-hmm. And it would increase gain cohort replacement rate and fitness estimates.
How do you know, like, who to exclude them?
You don't know individuals. Yeah. All you know is that of the 21 female carcasses that were inspected for whether they still had eggs in them, 14%. Mm-hmm. Three was that. It's not a great sample, but it was an unusual event for up above the North San Diego. And I think they come off the top. Mm-hmm. I think you just simply expand.
Take out some zeros.
Or again, report both values.
Or both values,
yeah.
Right. But it's another instance, and I've really tried to find instances where something happened that might have overestimated this, and I can't in this. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, we had one case where we had some fish that were outplanted, and a discrepancy in the records, Briggs' records, and the truck driver's records. The truck driver basically said that you released the fish. It was a slew of males, actually, down at Shelburne. But we think they actually went above.
They mated with outplanted females. I don't know how they did that. Being at Shelburne, yeah.
But from my recollection.
Go back to 09 on those recycles. I went back through the records. 107 were taken down to Shelburne and Green. 53 came back and were put above the dam.
Okay. Well, but we looked at it both ways, and in fact, my recollection is it really didn't alter the end results either way. So, where there could have been some bias in the other direction, it didn't influence the end result.
Yeah, a lot of these like small issues with, you know, report data records or whatever, they're usually dealing with a few fish, so one way or the other, it doesn't seem to affect the take-home message. So we've calculated things multiple ways in this study.
So am I seeing this right? In the future, the cohort number, because of Minto rebuild, goes way down. Was it 151 for 2011 outplants?
151, 250-something for 11-12. But 150 went up in 2011. 250 went up in 2012, roughly equal six ratios. And then 2013, Minto came back online, and that's when we actually started getting quite certain 100% samples of everything that went up and every unclipped fish that came into the facility, plus our spawning ground survey samples that we took again.
So 2009 and 10 are kind of anomalous years, I think, because of the sex ratio issue in 2009, and then 2010 it was just a huge number of outplants, almost 3,000, I think. So those cohort replacement rates are going to be, I think, pretty low just because of the absolute number of fish that were put above the dam.
But on the other hand, with 100% or near 100% sampling of returning fish from the 2011 and 12 outlines of small numbers of spawners, that could get us at replacement rates that we're actually looking for. We're looking for replacement rates in the 3 to 4 range, not 1.1. That's where we get recovery. And theoretically, that's where we'd see it. High productivity of low abundance fish, that's the beginning of the spawner recruit function. Excited, can't wait.
Got to be able. In theory.
How much time could speed up on some of this stuff?
Zebrafish.
So, how are the agencies viewing this information? Well, first, thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you.
So where are folks on this? NUSA, no DFW.
Elise, can you hear this?
Adjusted this at all?
I can hear you, Cam.
I know. I'm yelling at the phone, but I'm moving the phone down to the end of the table. Rich, you're so soft-spoken. You don't have to.
Let her hear me. I was just so we had the presentation. I just asked the question: how are agencies viewing this in terms of a decision on Detroit Dam disposition?
Right. So. We're going to look at the results of the study. We have to consider some other factors. We're going to be discussing those amongst ourselves. And then within the next couple of weeks, we expect to arrive at a decision about this. I will say that there's some discussion about the HDMP, and we may need coverage. I'm not totally clear on this, but we may need coverage under the HDMP if we're going to be moving fish because we don't have any other plan to be putting natural origin recruits above Detroit, so I don't know. There's several things I need to look into, but I may be coming back to the Corps and saying, hey, we need to sit down and hash out the North San Yam HDMP, and I don't know where you guys are at with that, and whether or not you're going to consider that possible. But I do know that the Chinook are starting to come into Minto, and I don't want to have to delay Greg's operations for very long. So I would say within the next couple of weeks, we will have a direction on this.
Okay, would it make sense to have a meeting put on the calendar for agencies to be able to come back and work through this decision? Like you say, Chinook are starting in now. Was that a fair...
Right. I would say, yeah. I can't really answer that right now, but I could get back to you with that. I could get back to you in the next couple of days and say, yeah, let's go ahead and put something on the calendar or, you know, whatever. And who is that's talking?
It's Rich, Pyskowski Corps.
Okay. All right, Rich. So why don't we say I'll get back to you in the next, let's say by the beginning of next week with whether or not we need to arrange a meeting between the agencies. Does that sound good, or did you...
Well, I would think we need to plan for that, but if 2 weeks is not reasonable, maybe you could just get back in a couple of days on what the time frame that works for you or in ODFW in general.
Okay, that sounds good.
Hey, Rich, this is Dave. I don't think you're requesting a multi-agency meeting, are you? I think you're just asking ODFW when they might have a response?
Well, I would have thought, yeah, another meeting that involves the water participants just to confirm an approach on disposition makes sense.
Okay.
How do you see it?
Well, I was just thinking that, you know, we've been waiting for a long time for this particular report, and it's a compelling report, and I think that ODFW, the fish manager, needs to sit down with NIMS and decide whether it's an appropriate time to decide to outplant natural origin fish above Detroit. To me, this is pretty compelling data, and it's exciting. But yeah, and Elise brings up an excellent point about the take concept. There's no way that the North Sandium HGMP could be finalized, even if it was in NIMS hands right now and deemed to be sufficient. It's still a very lengthy process that they have to go through. So we would have to go a different route. And Lance is a very imaginative person. He can figure something out. But anyways, I'm encouraged that you guys are thinking about the idea of putting up natural origin fish. But yeah, I think the sooner we have a decision, the better it's going to be, because fish are starting to move.
Well, Dave, I'll say in response to that yes, while this data is interesting, it is 1 year of data, and so I would not call it compelling at this point. It is 1 year of data, that's all it is, and it's an interesting indication. I would agree with you on that, but that's why we need additional time to really look at what makes sense here. Does it make sense to do one thing for 1 year that we may not do in other years? Does it make sense to wait for additional data?
Sure.
Before we move forward with this?
That's a good point. I keep thinking back to the alternatives or options if the agency decided not to put these fish up above Detroit, because they aren't very good. There's just not very many good alternatives. In fact, I think it'd be much more challenging, you know, to be putting these fish up above Minto Dam right now because of the conditions that we're going to see over the ensuing months due to the water issues. And so, I mean, that's what troubles me, I think, a lot, is this particular water year is just not good for salmon and steelhead down below. And, you know, so the options aren't real attractive, I guess.
Yeah, Elise, Rich Pyskowski again. And I can appreciate, more data is helpful. We, again, would see it as pretty compelling when you compare it to what we see now for cougar and foster. But, if you guys are seeing need for more data, I think consistent with our discussion on cougar, we need to understand what's the decision framework then for applying data and making a decision about disposition in the North Sandy Yam.
I'm fine with having that discussion. That obviously won't be something that will happen in the next few weeks. But yeah, that would be a good discussion to have.
Well, we think it's critical, especially like Dave mentioned, the environmental conditions this year. We're already seeing Chinook coming in. If there's reasons that ODFW cannot make a decision this year, that'd be good to know and the reasons why. But we have a new trap. It's been operating for a few years now at Minto. It was put in place for this reason, to start being able to reintroduce fish upstream. We've already got that in place in Foster and Cougar, where we're putting wild fish up, and these results suggest conditions are better as it is for North Sandy Yam than Cougar. But look forward to more discussion on that.
I guess for NIMS, you know, this is interesting. You know, it's one data point. We wanted to talk about it internally, Stephanie and others. But as far as like management, one of the things that comes to mind, so, you know, is the key thing in the summary that we're about 60% of the fish, 60%, that's a majority, but it's only, you know, 40% of the fish did not assign to above Detroit. So you have a huge batch of fish in the trap that you know don't belong above Detroit.
I don't think we have a good sense right now that they don't belong, just because there are so many unsampled fish.
Sampling rate.
So that could be contributing to that really high rate of unassignments. Yeah. And that'll be an issue that continues for a few years, just because of the, you know, the way the early years of the the sampling was done.
Agreed, but if you do the linear extrapolation, one more thing with optimism, you do get to a point where you estimate something like about 20% of natural production is coming from fish right. that would likely not have been assigned.
Right.
And 20% of 1,000 is a significant number of fish. It's up to 1,500 so far this year, so something crazy. Mm-hmm. Great. Not this year, but this we're guessing. But I have to roll back a little bit to the HGMP. We have flipped over that so fast. Hang on a second now. Is this a great time for ODF&W and the Corps to hammer out what I think are probably relatively minor issues in the HGMP and move that forward starting now? For one thing, I don't think the HGMP captures enough flexibility to talk about outplanting large numbers of natural origin fish. I don't really remember if that's built into that final section talking about disposition. And it should be. And maybe this is the time to add that to an agenda item between Elise, you, whoever else needs to be on the table and start getting that HGMP finalized. Yeah, there's going to be question lags, but...
Well, to sort of speak to that, and going back to what Dave said, so there's no way the HGMP will be approved by NIMS this summer. But the way we've handled all of this stuff in the past is the co-managers, the funders, the operators, put it in the HGMP, get in the HGMP what you want to do, and then you submit it to us. And so that's just saying, you know, you have your plan in place, what you want to do, and you've just submitted it to NIMS, and now it's in our ballpark to handle it. But at least you guys have ironed out your operations and what you want to do, and that's critical to have that completed and updated given these results.
So that's the mechanism that we could use. Take the HGMP.
I'm missing something on why the HGMP is the venue for addressing take on natural origin fish going upstream.
It's primarily because that's where the whole hatchery supplementation, outplanting, reintroduction piece, management of all that is included in the HGMP because we're using hatchery fish for reintroduction.
Yeah, but what does that have to do with the natural origin fish?
Well, embedded within that, it would be just like the McKenzie, you know, how many wild fish are included in the supplementation effort? How are you factoring in natural origin fish into the whole?
I think of the trapping operation at Minto as part of the whole program, including the hatchery. So, I mean, I've always thought of it embedded in the HGMP, because that's the mechanism we use to sequester and then...
Well, I mean, it sure could be, but when you look at the template and by title, Hatchery Genetics Management Plan, I don't know that does it have to be the place to deal with natural origin take?
Is saying, Rich, is that take has to be identified in an HGMP, and it's typically listed as a up to or a range or something like that. But right now, under the Table 223-2 in the North Sanium HGMP, the collect for transport above dams for natural origin spring chinook it says TBD, so there is no number identified at this point.
Okay, let's change that. There's a table and a place to hold the number.
Well, I think the reason why it has to be in the HGMP is because it's a part of the reintroduction program. If we were not using hatchery fish for reintroduction above the dams, then it would not have to be. So like Foster example with winter steelhead, there's no hatchery nexus, no nothing. How that trap and haul is handled is totally outside the HGMP. There's nothing in that HGMP related to winter steelhead.
Okay, thanks.
So Lance, if I understand you correctly, if we identify and then put it into the HGMP and submit that to NIMS, that's enough coverage to proceed with those operations?
That's what the agency should be doing if you're wanting to keep this as a possibility this season and into the future. And there's no reason why we're updating the HGMPs right now not include an essential management thing like this.
Okay.
this is Lisa. Unless there's other comments or questions for me, I'm going to have to sign off. I got to go to another meeting. I should get back in touch, Rich, with you by early next week about a time frame for another meeting, perhaps.
Okay, appreciate it.
All right, thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Elise.
Thanks.
Okay, so we'll look forward to talking about this again. In the meantime, it sounds like we need to address that North Sandy MHGP. Take a look at that.
Among others.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I'm not sure that's the highest priority.
Yeah. For this topic, at least.
For all.
All the HGPs.
Yeah. Understood.
Just while everybody's around the table, what do we do about wild fish that come into Minto in the interim? I mean, if we just slam it, we're going to have something like an HGMP in a few weeks. But a few weeks, a bunch of fish move to that system.
Yeah.
What do we do then?
May not this year.
Turn the temperature down. Stall them out.
The temperature's pretty down right now.
That's happening.
We're talking high 30s.
What do you mean not this year? Hold on a second now. I've got those numbers. I just reported them to this stack right here. Hundreds of them passed Bennett.
I'm talking, go back to your 2006.
Really?
And prior, pre-temperature control.
2003 and 4 would be good years if I get that, because those were awful years before temperature control.
Yeah.
Well, Greg can speak to this, but I remember him just like twiddling his thumbs during a lot of the SCAB meetings of the summer because he didn't have any fish.
That's right. We'll see him sometime late July, August.
Yep.
I mean, if you've seen that 2,000 fish at Bennett and I've seen 21, I mean...
Yeah, that's not a very good ratio.
Yeah, well, I said that. Looking back at the recent years, there's about a month lag, 3 weeks, between peaks at Minnow and peaks at Bennett. Takes them a while.
And you got to remember, we've never dealt with 1,000 CFS. I don't know how that's going to... You know, you look back at those years, and we'd have 2,000-3,000 CFS in May and June on some of those big snow years.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So it gives us more time to work on the HGMP before the wild fish arrive. There's a silver lining everywhere.
Your question, I'm not delaying migration. When fish come into the trap, if it's not marked, it's getting a genetic sample, a pit tag, and a ploy tag, and it's going above.
Going above, yeah. And what else is he supposed to do? I mean, he could leave them there, I guess. But.
Hey, Lance, just to clarify, so if a meeting is scheduled in May to try to come to a decision on disposition at Detroit, is NIMS, what do you see NIMS' position? Is it going to be that, no, we won't be able to actually do this until we have an HGMP submitted, or... Is it possible to carry out an
operation?
Yeah,
I believe so. I think we need to talk about it internally. The other thing that comes to mind is this is a bad year. Flows are low. They're not going to get better. The in-depth spawning survey that was done from Minto to Big Cliff last year did not show good results at all. So there's a lot of stuff going on that may influence that decision, I would say.
Okay.
Really poor incubating conditions below the dam for sure.
Well, I forget the numbers, Cam, but there were hundreds of wild unmarked Chinook that went above Minto last year.
80 reds.
And 80 reds out of that big group of unmarked fish.
Thanks for your help on that, by the way. I think they got two good counts. I really do think benefit from your expertise.
So not a good return. On that.
So, I mean, assuming Elise and ODFW are prepared, seems like we should be getting a calendar date identified for later May. At least get a doodle pull out, Andy.
Yeah.
Placeholder. Because the season has already started. If a decision is going to be made to influence anything this year, it has to happen. Oh, is it next?
God, that you're done.
Yeah. Okay, next Friday.
The other problem we're looking at is we're desperately trying to get a outplant site on the north above the dam. So we've got a spot. I've got just to get a road in there, and we can have one. But right now, we really don't have a good outplant spot on the north.
Yeah,
start the Brighton Bush on it. Start the Brighton Bush.
Yeah.
I meet with the Brighton Bush commune tomorrow.
Have fun.
Commune.
And I got to dress appropriately. But fancy shoes. I got to wear. And nothing else. Oh my.
Alright.
Yeah, just an update for you, Andy. I've had two guys go up this week and look at that road for the log deck site. Hopefully I'll get those bids here in the next day or two.
Great. That's awesome.
That's a whole other question. If we do start out planting unmarked fish, where do we put them?
They'll move to where they want to go.
But if we stick them all the way up the Brighton Bush, they're lost. So they'd have to back all the way up. So our early plan, when we ultimately started out planting, was that they'd get out planted up at a reservoir, had a reservoir where they had a choice, where they could sniff out Brighton Bush and the North Senia. Canes?
The only boat ramp available, so.
Mongol's the only one this year, yeah.
Oh, you can't get down Canes?
No.
Oh, we won't get to Canes or Hoover this year.
No. Yeah. Mongol that is.
And that's a winter ramp. I'm going to have to go look at the steepness of that one.
Okay, that's down the road. We haven't even decided whether it's happening yet.
Yeah.
I need that whoosh system.
Sam can. It's going to save us a cougar, too.
Gravity fin.
I got enough. I could send some over to McKenzie.
They're doing good. They have their own.
Tom or Mark, do you guys have any thoughts on this? Anything you want to add?
Not anything that hasn't been said already. I think there's a difference between whether or not we implement it permanently or this year because of
yes.
the conditions.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. There's lots of good reasons to do it this year. I agree with the low water, with reds being better off above the dam than below, with the area above Minto being a poor choice in general for a refuge. All valid points, and the pedigree work just adds to that. So.
Yeah.
On the decision itself, we're deferring to Elise and management.
Tom, with your work on the paired release study, is it consistent?
It depends on how you look at it. I mean, it's consistent in that, as you know, passage of hatchery fish, it seems to be better in the North Sandham than it does in, say, the Middle Fork, but there's still a hit. The first year it was apparently 15%, the next 2 years it was apparently 40%, so I don't think anybody's going to call that passage good, but it's better than some other places.
Okay. Yeah, I guess when we first saw those paired release results, it suggested that there's a lot better survival than the direct injury studies indicated, and now this information suggests further that yes, there is survival, and it's better than cougar. 1 year data, but right now it's looking closer to Foster.
Surprisingly high.
Yeah.
So the paired release did seem to.
Yeah,
to
with all the usual caveats, but yeah,
spill,
I agree.
The spill operation seems to be having a benefit that we've been doing. We've got the new trap in place, so the thing, I guess, those aspects are coming together.
But I'll just reiterate, I think still, we just have very little data to be making long-term decisions right now, right? Next year, we'll be in a much better position, a much more informed position, with adult returns coming back from the paired release, and another year of data from the pedigree study using a great outplant year, lots of fish anyhow. Going up there in 2010, so we'll have a lot more information to inform decisions next year.
So what's the status of this funding?
Well, it goes into, this year's been funded, 15, and then we prioritize for 16 in June
15 samples are funded?
No, 14 sample processing is funded for Norsanium. That's the FY15 contract.
But the samples I collect this year, we haven't committed or allocated funds to process them.
Is that in your...
No, that would be... I collect them. I archive them.
You collect
That's
them.
Done.
Right.
But it's completely separate to get processed in it. But I could provide those samples to Melissa effective October 10th, almost certainly.
Did I miss something? The samples automatically get collected each year. Mm-hmm. We funded OSU this year to analyze 14 data.
So this was a bulk project. It was actually to fund, 2007 through 2014. So what we committed to Griff, he really wanted these results by mid-May. So we prioritized it, and Dave Jacobson genotyped thousands of fish in just a couple months in order to present these results. But these do not include the 2015 samples. Also, important thing, I guess, just from a big perspective, the funding, when it's decided, and when you have the results, it's got to be pushed up somehow, because, and it's not the core, but it's the whole process. So it goes from the core to the USGS to OSU. I think Griff started it in November. I got the money 3 days before I handed him the final report. So that's about $280,000 I'm just trying to...
Yeah.
And I can't afford to do that every year.
No.
But this year, I knew that these results were important, and so we did a lot of budget to make it happen.
Thank you for that.
Creative magic, but I can't do magic every year. So I just am curious of when these decisions are made. And again, Griff was great in terms of getting the MIPR through and stuff. It was actually USGS that really held it up for months on end, and then OSU. So when does this process start? When do you want proposals, and how can we move it so it's more realistic on both ends?
Well, again, thanks for working with us on this year. Was we got blown out of the water with Griff moving into a detail. I'll be back this summer, and other staff transitions.
Well,
that was
again
a big factor for us. But the timing is, we're prioritizing in June with the water RMNE. Then we request proposals over the summer. Those get finalized by the fall. Well, then we can't start funding until the fiscal year starts and we receive funds.
Right.
So it's no earlier than October. But that's the absolute earliest for any given year.
And again, I just want to point out, it wasn't the core, it was more USGS. That's what we run it through. That really held things up this time around. So
I don't know. Yeah, I assumed having Griff shift may have influenced the timing of the GS contract.
A little bit, but he was on top of things. The point is, as we all know, is funding anything, it's three or four agencies that have to sign off, and that just takes time. And it's no one's... it's just time, so.
Yeah.
I think this kind of speaks to the need to get these studies that we want to be long-term studies identified that way, so there's a more clear assurance of the funding coming, and it's not a yearly sitting around waiting for the prioritization to happen and all that. It can be more streamlined.
So we can talk about that, but the Corps can't fund anything beyond an annual cycle. We don't do long-term monitoring.
But if you knew that it was going to be funded for 5 years in a row, you could maybe have those pre-steps done before the funding is actually available.
Well, that's the thing. We can't say we're going to fund anything for 5 years in a row. We could identify the framework and know that this is a study that's going to be needed each year and rank it accordingly each year. But we can't say that this is a study that will be funded for 5 years.
But you can do, what we did in the cooperative with some of the resident fish, we set it up for a 5-year time frame, contingent on us receiving that annual.
And that's where great for bull trout.
And it's streamlined the process. That's all.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. No, I think there's things we can do.
So that would just help a hair. You
know. Right.
Well, it seems to me on all these pedigree funding issues, we're not on the same page, for long term, so we need to continue
to
discuss that.
We could be, but we need to identify how the data is going to now be applied. We have, like I said, I think the framework is there for McKinsey. Now we're talking about maybe tweaking it as new data come in and adapting it. Can we anticipate the same for the other drainages? It seems like we can get that on paper now. And we know how to deal with new data as it comes in, and we don't have to. There'll be, I guess, in terms of streamlining, a better way of analyzing the information when it comes in. We'll know how to deal with it.
All right. Anything else on this one? So I'll work with Elise and set up a meeting here in the next week or two. Hopefully as quick as we can, and then let's come to that meeting prepared to make a decision. So have whatever internal discussions need to be had, and let's make the choice then, or have the choice be revealed, however it goes. Anything else to cover today? I was going to get an update on the summer steelhead work group, but that would be just an update from Elise to see if she's had time to review Chuck Pevin's draft. But we can check with her afterwards. So if there's nothing else, we'll wrap up for today. Great. Cool. All right. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Danny. Of course. You're the only one doing any work here. So have it in our email before we even get back to the